the OTB Podcast Network.
Yes, yes, yes. It's Friday morning. It's just gone 7:30. Delighted you could join us on OTB AM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. Owen Shehan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Adrian. How are you?
I'm all good. Gloomy morning. This time last week, I was trying to avoid the sun splashing in my window, but it's a little bit more gloomy today, which is perhaps a bit of a sort of mood of the nation as well this morning after some pretty grim news yesterday on the coronavirus front. We'll have plenty more of that to come over the duration of the show. Big movement last night at 8 o'clock. It only actually struck me late in the day that this was a thing that was happening because I'm trying to check out of the news as much as I possibly can, obviously, with all its grimness. But what a beautiful moment last night at 8 o'clock where... I was going to say the nation, but certainly large parts of the nation came out to applaud those who were effectively putting their lives on the line for our safety. And yeah, the clap for cares was a huge success where I was. Owen, what was going on where you were?
Yeah, I don't think everybody in my certain area knew what was going on, to be honest. But there were certainly a few people who were out the front. I think it actually became more of a thing afterwards. I'm incorrect in saying that. Like, people saw the videos and it was like, right, okay, that's what was going on. Like yourself, I'd seen it late in the day myself and had expected it to happen. So, a few of us were outside marking it, and like it's amazing, really. Like we've had a lot of conversations this week in terms of how this week is going to change, or how these next couple of weeks and these next few months is going to change how we behave and how we think in Ireland. And one of those things I'd imagine would be just a greater appreciation for all our healthcare workers. They're absolutely at the front lines. Everything we are doing on a day-to-day basis in terms of social distancing and isolation is for them. It is to lessen the load on them, and is to save lives for them and the finite resources that they have. And you just hope that they can get everything they possibly can get within reason to be able to do as good a job as they could possibly do over these next few months, because it is an uphill task. And seeing the news yesterday, the most tragic day yet of COVID-19 in Ireland, it really crystallizes, I think, the importance of the healthcare workers.
Yeah, it's like we're applauding their efforts at saving our lives, essentially, is what's happening here. Like, there's probably a little bit of selfishness, to be honest, rooted in it somewhere. But listen, however it comes about, hopefully it's something that's resonated with them. I'd made the point on Twitter last night that at the minute, with everything that's going on, I'm at the brink of things. I'm not that far from being at the brink of things generally, but last night nearly pushed me over the edge when we were putting the two kids to bed, and you're kind of... not in any Michael Jackson way, but leaning out the window a little bit to make sure that the applause is heard loud and clear, and you can see the neighbours all around. And there's a real solidarity. There's never been anything like this before. I mean, in some ways, obviously, certainly in terms of the tragic aspect to it, you really hope that we never have to see it again. But there's that thing that's bonding communities and society and people and connecting people. I've never seen anything like it before. It's remarkable.
No, I think most people have either been at the brink or well beyond the brink at this point. And that is still while having an appreciation, and I think I speak for the vast majority here, still having the appreciation that we are all extremely lucky to, speaking just for myself, not having any family members who've been affected so far. You always kind of think to yourself, touch wood. And a lot of people, I think, who were applauding last night were in that situation, that they haven't exactly been directly affected by this just yet, but yet you are on the brink of emotion, constantly thinking about those who unfortunately are going through this, and the tragedy that struck 10 families yesterday, for example, and is going to strike many more families over the next couple of weeks. It's everybody, I think, is a ball of emotion at this point. And I guess actually sharing in that in your community, no matter what you're in, like you saw some of the videos last night of people maintaining social distancing, but still out in front of their houses, applauding amongst their neighbours, for example, and just kind of looking around thinking, right, OK, it's not just me, because I'd imagine it can get lonely for a lot of people, this period of self-isolation for some and social distancing for others.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, we obviously have a new date now in the last couple of days as well in terms of the next target. And you'd probably expect something after that, at the very minimum, at least one more update after that to kick us probably into the middle of May or thereabouts. And we'll see where we're at from that. It has been, because we've been all looking at for the last probably 2 weeks or thereabouts, maybe a little bit longer, those videos from Spain and from Italy, the singing, the instrument playing, the sense of community that existed there. I wonder if, I did wonder if this is going to become a nightly thing now. And you know, there's a tradition in this country around the island of obviously banging the dustbin lids off the ground and that kind of thing. I wonder if yeah, I wonder if this is going to take on a life of its own now, in terms of this is going to be a nightly thing where we all rally in support of the healthcare workers, or if it's just a one-off hit where we're all like, yeah, that's it, job done now, best of luck. It feels like it might actually, there might be an opportunity for us to get onto this every day.
Completely. Like, it's interesting when you talk about what we've been seeing in Spain and in Italy. It's a situation where we're like, oh, that's the Spanish and Italian people obviously wearing their heart in their sleeves quite a lot, getting out and singing from their balconies, whereas we would obviously be a nation that wouldn't necessarily do the same thing. We don't talk about our emotions quite a lot. We don't, like when you talk about being on the brink there, I don't think too many Irish people before would ever have admitted being on the brink in any sort of situation before, whereas now it's a situation where people in their WhatsApp groups are texting their mates saying, Jesus, yeah, having a tough day today. And what comes from that then is a greater outpouring of emotion when you have something like this, a greater buy-in when you have something very simple organized like this. You wonder if it's going to be something that lasts into the long term beyond this, because it's probably a society more in tune with their emotions, perhaps, that you then have afterwards. Mm. Like, definitely, I think that if this is something that we see on a regular basis every night, it's the least anyone can do just to show a little mark of appreciation. It doesn't take a whole lot of time out of your schedule. It might make the life of one healthcare worker, or might make their day a little bit better by seeing this footage, and I think that's probably worth it.
Yeah, we'll see. I was on the news round during the week, and we were talking about this sort of thing about, what happens when all this, fingers crossed, and we're all still here, when all this passes over, in terms of the psyche of the country. Like, there will be a point, and in a lot of ways, hopefully it's soon, where we all sort of wander back into where we were before all this bubbled up, that, like, almost that's the best result, that you're not sort of waking up every morning going, Jesus, thank God it's another day down, or whatever the case might be, that actually there is a... Have you seen The Matrix?
Yes.
You know the stake stuff where the guy goes, he gets an option at some point, you can sort of sign up to be in The Matrix and understand on some level that none of it is that real, or you can go back and take the gamble of living in real life. And the guy was like using the stake thing to entice him. He was like, look, taste the stake. Like, you know it's not real, but taste the steak, it's amazing. There is that element of once this is all done, that you go back to that land where you're just happily perusing through your life, and you're not having to have existential thoughts at every hand's turn. There's a real comfort in that idea, I have to say, at the minute.
Yeah, definitely. I think perusing through your life and not having to think existentially is actually a real luxury that a lot of us have had for the vast majority of our lives, thankfully. It's why certain things are important. It's why sometimes, say, if we're talking about sport, for example, over the last couple of weeks, it can sometimes feel a little bit challenging given the bigger picture of what's going on in Ireland. It goes for a lot of other things. Basically, anything that's not to do with COVID-19 at the moment almost seems a little bit trivial. But then you kind of forget how important those trivial moments were, and those trivial things were, when you were perusing through the kind of unchallenging aspects of life before this. And then you're actually these sort of things might be more important than ever, because perhaps for 10 minutes a day, you might be able to, as you, the great, great verb, you might actually be able to peruse through these things in a fairly blasé way, I think. And being blasé about things, even for 10 minutes a day right now, is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, give me some of that on. Give me some of that. Right. Normally we do some sort of a what's on up to for the weekend. I mean, I don't even know if there's a value in asking you that anymore. On what's on the menu for the weekend?
Good question. So last weekend did involve managed to a good socially distanced walk and a couple of them last week. I've found a few spots that have been certainly quiet and stuff that you can get out and about. The same thing would probably be engaged in this weekend, and I'm bringing my quiz writing talents to my friend's WhatsApp group tonight as well. I'll probably do some sort of quiz, because I'm that arrogant guy who's like, yeah, I will write the quiz. I always kind of think that the people who've been writing the quizzes over the last couple of weeks on Zoom or on Skype or wherever people have been doing it, I'm like, it takes a fair bit of confidence to do that. So I've actually bit the bullet and said, listen, I'm going to take my profession. I'm a professional quiz writer, let's not forget. And I'll be taking them into our WhatsApp group at some point.
Right. Well, listen, good luck with that. And best of luck to your mates as well, because we've been all on the end of one of your crappy quizzes. And sometimes they don't necessarily make all that much sense. But listen, it'll be enjoyable, if nothing else. We can you can get in touch with us over the course of the morning as well, with you until 9:30. Lots of great stuff coming. 087-9180-180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp at some point over the course of the morning. Let us know. Last Friday, we had loads of contact from various points around the globe of people saying good morning. Well wishes as well. So do please get in contact with us this morning, whatever it is you're up to this morning, or whatever it is you're at. We really would love to hear from you. So do keep in contact with us over the course of the day, of course, on all the usual social channels as well. A little bit of an update on what's been happening in the world of sport while you were sleeping. The Irish gymnast Rhys McLenaghan has been dealing with the news that his Olympic dream will have to wait. The Tokyo Games were postponed this week until 2021 due to the ongoing pandemic. And McLenaghan, who's won the World Championship bronze, of course, and European gold on the pommel horse, says that it's a case of adapting now. You can check out that full piece with his conversation with Nathan from the show last night. It's up on offtheball.com. In boxing, the Irish High Performance Director, Bernard Dunn, says that he'd like to have the Irish team tested for coronavirus. This is a story that's doing the rounds today. Obviously, Ireland had sent a team of 13 fighters to the European Olympic qualifiers in London a couple of weeks back for to be suspended after 3 days. You'd have heard from Kelly Harrington on the show a bit earlier in the week and her thoughts about all of that. Three boxers and three coaches have since tested positive for the virus, not in the Irish camp, in the Croatian and Turkish federations. So it's in that context that Bernard Dunn says that while none of his team have been showing symptoms, either the fighters or the backroom staff, he would like to have them tested just to be on the safe side. And FIFA to draft emergency regulations to keep players at their current clubs when their contracts expire on the 30th of June. This is one of the intriguing complications of everything that's going on at the minute. What exactly, in across all sports, happens to these players once their contract expires and they're due to either leave that club and head off into retirement, or I suppose in a more complicated fashion, they're due to join another club. So what's going to happen exactly there? FIFA weighing into that. David Silva at Man City, Chelsea's Pedro Giroud and Willian, Adam Lallana at Liverpool, another one, all amongst those who've been out of contract, and football obviously suspended with the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. So what happens at the back of that? We'll see FIFA weighing in to try and help that. Right, it's 7:42 on this Friday morning. Here's a bit of a flavour of what's coming up over the course of this morning for you. And as I said, hope you're well wherever it is you're at this morning. We are going to tell you what's happening in the back pages in just a couple of moments time. Some interesting stories on the sports pages today. We're going to have the lockdown lowdown, where Owen, myself and Tommy have been digging around from the various stories around the interweb over the course of the last 24 hours. And we're going to see exactly the best of those and bring those your way in just a couple of moments time. We're going to be joined on the line by Keith Andrews, who's getting behind the Feed the Heroes campaign, which again very much speaks to the health and well-being and the welfare of our healthcare frontline staff. And Keith's been getting involved in that. You'd have seen the Seamus Coleman video during the week. Keith was the one who instigated that, so we'll get his thoughts on that and find out exactly how he's coping, and definitely put some of those football talking points to him as well. Noel Healy is the Dublin footballer and is very much at the front line as an ICU doctor, very much at the front line of this pandemic at the minute, as the wave we're told about is going to hit us at some point very soon. And Noel is very much at the front line of that. A four-time All-Ireland winner, multiple All-Star as well, and former Player of the Year too. So be interested to get Noel's thoughts about how this is all playing out on a very practical level as well. So that's coming your way a little bit later on. Eric Donovan is off the couch today. I don't know if you've been following this series during the week, but Andy Dunn, Robbie Cannon and several others have been putting you through your paces with lovely short 3-4 minute videos where you get the opportunity to get up off the couch and put yourself through a few reps. Well, taking that today is going to be the Kildare boxer, Eric Donovan. So he'll be in conversation with us a little bit later on. Brand new feature coming your way. We gave you the little teaser for it on this morning's OTB AM. It's a kids takeover where the kids get to ask the questions. So that's going to be a really cool piece that we're going to have for you. And particularly today, because Brian O'Driscoll is the one that's in the hot seat and has been put through his paces by a bunch of kids with some fairly interesting questions. That's coming away a little bit later on. And then we're going to round things off. Owen mentioned his quiz prowess there a little bit earlier on, certainly in terms of writing the questions. I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen with this crappy quiz today, because it's going to be myself, Tommy and Ger fighting it off for the latest title of crappy quiz champion. Just who's it going to be? I mean, I'll be up against two hive minds, it has to be said, that really pride themselves on their sporting knowledge. So we'll see exactly who can come out on top. That's the crappy quiz coming your way just after 9:00. But right now it is time for the papers. OTB AM. Yeah, it is 7:45 on this Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. Do get in contact with us. We want to hear from you. Let you know what's happening in the papers in just a second. But up at offtheball.com to begin with, really interesting read and watch from John Giles, who was on with Nathan last night. He selected his greatest ever Liverpool 11. So you're sort of straight away wondering exactly which players from the current crop have made the grade. And there's only two of them, Virgil van Dijk and Andy Robertson. Given the quality, obviously, that that club have had down the years, I suppose even that's a good reflection of where they're at. But no Salah, no Mane. I suppose you've got the likes of Dalglish, Rush, et al. In the mix there. Maybe no great surprise on that, but you can go up and check out that full team up and offtheball.com as well. And also the story of the top four Bundesliga clubs who've decided to share some of the wealth with the less well-offs. They're sharing a whole pile of money with the two divisions below them to try and help the second and third tiers of German football afloat over the coming months. So really nice move there from the top clubs in the Bundesliga. That's offtheball.com. Let's have a look at what's happening in the Irish Independent for you this morning. Lovely photo, as you'll see there, of the late, great John O'Leary. He passed away yesterday. Still a very young man when he passed. He had bridged. It was a name that would have been very familiar, I would think, to a lot of sports fans, not just golf fans. But yeah, it was lovely photograph, as you can see there, of John holding aloft the trophy from his Irish Open win at Portmarnock in 1982. Bridge a long gap of home Irish Open winners. You can see him there in 1982. It was 7 years after the previous winner, Christy O'Connor, and 32 years, of course, before the next one in Padraig Harrington in 2007. But I don't know how familiar you are with this one, but there was a great story in 82 at Portmarnock. He had bogeyed the 17th. On the final day, I watched a little bit of the highlights this morning. He had a two-shot lead at that point. It was down to one off the back of that. And funnily enough, he had bogeyed the 18th at the same club 4 years earlier to lose the tournament when he had been tied for the lead at that point. And he ended up in a tie for second, but none other than Seve Ballesteros. So quite a career he had. And that tournament actually won by Ken on the course, by Ken Brown, right, as it would have it. And he had had an incredible, I was watching that, putt that he had on the 18th in 1982. He had a brilliant approach shot which left him about 30-40 feet for birdie. His opponent, his playing partner that day, was also his opponent to win the tournament, also had a great shot in and just came up short for his own birdie, which obviously would put the pressure on big time. So he had to effectively lag it up to a couple of inches to just lag it up and then knock it in for a par, which he did brilliantly, and obviously the scenes that you would see at the end, but just the storylines around it. The only thing I'd ever known about John O'Leary was 1982 Irish Open. Nobody's won it since, and that was sort of it. But actually, there is a longer piece in discussing everything that unfolded in 1982, and it's from short something that will happen over the coming days.
Definitely. It's pretty much in all the newspapers this morning. The Irish Examiner, as you can see at the top of their sports front page, Golf United in respect for Jono and using the lockdown to get off the hamster wheel, writes Ronan O'Gara, the main piece in the Irish Examiner sports section today about how he's utilising the lockdown. Not too dissimilar to the piece he did with yourself last week, Adrian, on Off the Ball. And the primary issue is getting not just rugby, but society back on track, writes Simon Lewis as well. Meanwhile, Jones agreed to 25% pay cut immediately, says RFU chief. So this is a story that was doing the rounds yesterday, that they would request that Eddie Jones takes a pay cut given the reduced finances as a result of COVID-19. And it seems that he has agreed to do so immediately.
Yeah, just a couple of other stories in the Indo before I bring you the Irish Times. From the Independent, Dan McDonald writing about how the Republic of Ireland might be without several players for the rescheduled Euro 2020 playoff in June, if it does go ahead, obviously, at that time. A FIFA meeting today to discuss several things, including the rule which obliges clubs to release players and the view that they might relax that for June and July as they've done for March and April, at which point players wouldn't have to travel. I wonder what exactly happens in that instance. Can the player force it? Is he obliged to stay at the club? We'll see how that plays out. And Frank Roach as well, also in the Irish Independent, writing about Derris Common querying whether their championship game against London, which was fixed for May the 2nd, has been cancelled, which Fergus McGill, who's the fixtures chief at Croke Park, had said yesterday, or actually just postponed. So there are the stories from the Irish Independent. The Irish Times, World Rugby, making plan to save the unions from financial collapse, writes Gavin Comiskey here. 180 million profit, a staggering number, which I wasn't aware of, that had been accrued from Rugby World Cup in Japan would be used there. Comiskey says that at present, the Irish Rugby Football Union is not in that category, but a failure, obviously, of rugby to return by September would place the game on this island under threat, he writes. And England and France, as a consequence to all this, suddenly allowing World Rugby to talk to their players about more things than just player welfare. They're now obliging, I suppose, if you could word it that way, by allowing World Rugby to look at how they might be able to help clubs survive financially beyond this pandemic. Emmett Malone takes up the story of James McLean's Instagram post. He was homeschooling his kids while wearing a balaclava, and it's caused a bit of a stir, as you might imagine. And intriguing story as well from Johnny Watterson down the bottom. I mentioned it a bit earlier on. Bernard Dunn's request to have the entirety of Team Ireland boxers and backroom staff tested after that. Obviously, they were at the London European Olympic qualifiers in the last couple of weeks. Some of the teams, not the Irish team, but some of the other teams who were at it, had since tested positive for it. Bernard Dunn asking that some of his, all of his team get tested.
The Irish Daily Star this morning, Adrian leads with up for the cup, September showpiece final possible, writes Jeremy Cross. So football bosses in England insist the FA Cup will be completed this season, even if the final has to be played in September. We've also got COVID-19 blow for Dub star. So this is Siobhan Killeen, who is obviously Dublin football, but also a radiographer at Dublin's Mater Hospital, has tested positive for COVID-19. She's urged people to abide by expert advice in the fight against the virus. She first experienced symptoms last Sunday evening, was tested on Monday, and received her results on Tuesday. She is self-isolating, but reports that she's doing well and is anxious to return to work when cleared. You've also got Whelan aiming for the Euros, writes Paul Lennon. Glenn Whelan will postpone his intended international retirement if Ireland reach next year's Euros, as a 36-year-old midfielder had penciled in his boys in green farewell for this summer at the tournament if they had qualified. But obviously that's going to have to be pushed back if he wants to play next year. And GAA facing major call. GAA Chiefs will have to go with old school knockout championships if the coronavirus stoppage extends into the summer.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting stories on that we might get to in a little bit. But the Mirror before that, and the idea that Premier League games, the 3 o'clock starts on the Saturday, which haven't been live in the UK for quite some time. We've had the pleasure of it here on various channels, but not in the UK, with the idea, obviously, that they get people to grounds. They're now saying that they would press ahead with the idea of putting games at 3 o'clock on the Saturday with the explicit purpose of keeping people away from the games, obviously, post-coronavirus, writes John Cross there in the Mirror this morning. And I did wonder why they would leave it to chance, why they wouldn't just say, let's put a limited capacity at the various grounds, which was something I just assumed would happen out the other side, where you have a 40,000 ground, we're going to limit it to 5,000 or 10,000 initially, rather than we put the game on TV in the hope that people won't come. I don't quite fully understand that. Maybe they will do things like that in tandem. And also the other line just in the Mirror was that the Leeds manager, Marcelo Bielsa, has taken a 40 grand a week wage deferral, according to that piece in the Mirror this morning. So there's a lot of chat about wage deferrals this morning across a lot of the papers, particularly in relation to the players. And that's effectively the idea that they would say, we'll see you again. We're not taking a pay cut. And it seems like Premier League players have been very insistent on that. But you can pay us again when the revenue starts to come back in. That's the Mirror this morning.
The UK Times this morning posts the photograph of James McLean on their back page. McLean makes IRA joke is their headline with the photograph there, as you've already mentioned, Adrian, from his Instagram account yesterday. Risked the wrath of fans after the Ireland midfielder posted an image of himself wearing a balaclava while leading a history lesson. So that's their main picture on their back page. Their main story is that players must finish the season at their clubs, as you already mentioned. It's Matt Lawson reporting that players looking to move when their contracts expire at the end of June will be made to stay at their clubs until this season is finished, as part of a FIFA plan drawn up in response to the coronavirus, and plan to hold tour behind closed doors. This is something we were chatting about on yesterday's show. Organisers of the Tour de France are considering holding the entire 3-week race behind closed doors as they aim to prevent the event becoming the latest to fall foul of the coronavirus pandemic. Obviously a heap of logistical difficulties, and even the term behind closed doors is slightly comical in relation to the Tour de France.
Yeah, it might not necessarily mean actually indoors.
Well, obviously not, but that is where your head goes straight away. But no, it'll be just fans told to stay away. As we were saying yesterday, it's only really the start and finish line that are big crowd spots, isn't it? That's midway through the race and stuff like that. People are just out the front of their house watching the race go by.
Yeah, the Guardian for you this morning. English cricket is very seriously considering the possibility of running major tests in the summer behind closed doors as well. Isolation units and coronavirus testing units could be among the measures that they would put in place there to try and get these games run off. I was initially sort of a little bit surprised that they were that seriously considering it. They're the kind of measures that you would expect to happen at some point when this is actually blown over, that they would say at that point, right, we can... We mentioned the trickle last week that they can start to tap on ever so slightly, and best practice will be to have these units where we can test people that are coming into the grounds, or that we can isolate people that are actually in there. But to be, I would consider a little bit gung-ho, I would think, to be having that conversation just at the minute. Premier League players to accept wage deferrals rather than pay cuts is that other story we've mentioned. A big meeting today, and we shall see what the outcome of that will be. That's The Guardian for you.
The London Independent this morning leads with a photo there with the caption, "Game over as the FA calls off all non-league football." Emergency meeting to decide Wimbledon fate. Meanwhile, the All England Lawn Tennis Club will decide whether to go ahead with this summer's Wimbledon Championships during an emergency board meeting next week. So pressure's obviously been growing on them to make a decision. One of the biggest sporting events still remaining on the calendar for June and July. And Olympics count massive cost, writes Jack Rathbone. Rescheduling the Olympic and Paralympic Games to next year will incur massive costs, admitted Tokyo 2020 organisers. It'll be a big bill for them, but it'll be a big bill as well for all the NGBs and all the sports bodies putting forward athletes as well.
There's been a proper ripple of reaction to the news yesterday from Virgil McGill from the GAA about the postponement of some of the early games in the championship. One of them is taken up in the Irish News this morning by Cathal Kane, and Ulster have come out very strongly against the idea of going down the route of straight knockout championship and doing away with the provincial championships as well. As Ulster Secretary Brian McAvoy saying that it's not on the table. 32 county knockout with no provincials was the proposal. He said that wouldn't be in any of the scenarios we're discussing at the minute. I don't think it's going to be an option. You can run the championship off as quick running the provincial championship as opposed to 32 county straight knockout. It takes the same amount of time. It's not on the table. I don't understand where they're coming from, where the cry is coming from. Why? You're going to run it off any quicker. You're not going to run it off any quicker. So why is it even a topic for discussion? I don't know what you think about this, Owen, but I don't understand why everything isn't a topic for discussion, to be honest with you. Like, his logic around the duration of how long it takes is an interesting one that I hadn't given much consideration before today. And maybe there's an element of truth to it. But to be so dismissive and not sort of, well, look, it's interesting, I'm not sure it'll work out, we'll take it away and discuss it. It's very firmly Ulster says no.
Yeah, it really is. Everything is on the table right now. Like, there's obviously vested interests when you hear from provincial councils at the moment, because the one thing to fall by the wayside if you have a 32 county knockout championship is that the provincial competitions just won't happen, and that will directly impact the pockets of the Ulster Council. So you can see why people in certain corners will come out and say the things that they say, but everything should be on the table, including how can we play the provincial championships. But if we get to a situation where it's late summer before any inter-county GEA can resume, then the provincial councils are not, or the provincial championships are naturally going to be the first thing to fall by the wayside, I would say, after the National League. But from the sounds Virgil McGill was making yesterday, the National League is dust. That this thing is not going to happen. Like, Meath people and Mayo people will be counting their blessings this morning. Cork people will be cursing life because nothing will be happening for them in terms of getting promotion. But it seems that that won't go ahead. Next step now is just to, when you start hearing proper sounds that the provincial championships are going to be scrapped. But when he talks about the fact that it's not actually going to be quicker to play off a 32 county championship than whatever, the original one with a back door and all that, it's not necessarily true, because with different sized provinces, you're necessarily waiting for other provinces to get finished. And if everything was a bit more equal, you could actually have week after week after week of games instead of counties sitting on their hands for a few weeks. So if you want to get this thing done quickly and get it done in the space of 2 months or whatever it might be, then definitely the all knockout competition is the quickest way to do it.
Yeah, and just everything is up for discussion, man. That's the, I would have thought, I don't understand why it wouldn't be. Anyway, you've got the Telegraph.
The Telegraph leads with battle to survive. Sam Wallace on how Stevenage are fighting for their future. We're unfortunately going to see a few of these stories over the next little while of teams in the UK who are going to struggle to keep their head above water. Lambert says, sacrificing my pay is the least I can do. This is Ipswich Town's Paul Lambert. He's emerged as the first professional manager to defer his wages as his club grapples with the financial crisis caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Bruce calls for a festival of football to finish season. Meanwhile, Newcastle manager Steve Bruce there saying we should just get it all done quickly at the end. And crisis talks over EFL wage deferrals. Emergency measure could spread to Premier League. Leeds players agreed to halt pay to protect club staff.
Yeah, very briefly, Mike Keegan writes about the same thing in the Daily Mail this morning about those pay deferrals. Massive meeting today. We get the thoughts of Keith Andrews on that a little bit later on. Philip Lanigan on the GAA target now of mid-June is the latest date that they're obviously putting on the table from Fergal McGill yesterday. Again, we shall wait and see.
Let us have a look at the Sun this morning. And the Sun leads with a picture there of Mo Salah. Pyramid season break. COP 4 months without Salah. Jurgen Klopp faces a selection disaster next season with Mo Salah potentially away for up to 4 months. Egypt bosses still want the Liverpool star to play at the rescheduled Tokyo Olympics. So, of course, that is the other situation here, is that if anybody wants to play in the Olympics, they're going to miss a good section of next season. I think we can almost say for certain that there will be an overlap on that front. Like, Tokyo bosses are really making noise at the moment that it is going to be a springtime league or a springtime event. It is certain that the Premier League will be a springtime event. It could even run into next summer, given how things have gone all the way back. You've also got Rossi's tie is a runner. John Prenti insists that Roscommon's championship visit to London has not been scrapped. And non-league legal fight. This is the story again about FA Chiefs could face legal action after clubs below the English National League have had their seasons declared null and void.
All right, just gone 8 o'clock. Another piece to mention that's up on offtheball.com, by the way, just gone up this morning. A slightly different piece, it has to be said, and you can expect plenty of that over the next weeks and months, but one that everybody might be interested in. Arthur O'Dea, the resident in chief Off the Ball Bob Dylan nut, has put this one out there a little bit earlier. A previously unheard 17-minute Bob Dylan track, maybe not that all that unusual, and really worth checking out. Bob Dylan releases epic new song charting JFK's final moments in an effort. From Bob, he is that much of a legend to keep us all a bit distracted from the madness that's going on. He's decided to release a 17-minute track. And I know exactly what I'm going to be doing at 9:30 and 30 seconds this morning. I'm going to be going to have a little bit of a look at that. And I'll be interested to get Arthur's thoughts as well. He is literally a student of Bob Dylan. So go and check that out at offtheball.com. We have lots coming your way. It's 8:02 this morning. Plenty more coming your way a little bit later on. Keith Andrews is going to join us next on OTB AM. But first, let's hear from... No, in fact, we're going to save that for just a little bit. We've got a really strong hour coming up here. Eric Donovan is going to join us on the line for the very latest Off the Couch. We're going to chat to the Dublin footballer and ICU Dr. Noel Healy about life on the front line, and Keith Andrews as well coming your way. But up next, it's our lockdown lowdown. We're back after these.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station. OTB.
Off the Couch, live every day at lunchtime across the Off the Ball channels. While we're all staying at home, we want to help you get your daily exercise in. We're bringing you sporting experts with tips and workouts suitable to do at home.
Exercise is not defined to strict parameters. Once we get sweaty and out of breath, it works.
You might be stuck in the house, but let's keep moving and get off the couch.
You can use your couch to elevate your feet if you're lying on your back.
Off the Couch, Off the Ball's new lunchtime fitness program. You can get it on all our social channels and offtheball.com every day from 1 p.m.
OTB. OTB AM.
Up Kilkenny.
Kilkenny.
Boo Tip.
Boo Tip.
Boo Cork.
Boo Cork.
Up Kilkenny.
Up Kilkenny.
Yeah, that is the sounds of Brett's Hardware in Kilkenny. The Boo Cork is my favourite part about it, Adrian. You are welcome to our lockdown lowdown, by the way. We'll go through some of the best things from social media. I didn't realise that that's something, okay, as somebody from Kerry, perhaps, I've got a bit of a warmth for anybody who says Boo Cork. But just that is the best sounding thing I've ever heard, a baby saying Boo Cork.
The concern that I have off the back of all of this is the amount of time that all of us parents are getting to spend with our children, and like the best thing that they've had up to this point, I can only speak for myself, is the lack of exposure to me that probably have them on the straight and narrow. But you got to get inventive and creative, and God knows what sort of biases, subconscious and otherwise, that we're going to leave them without the other side. But that's a cracker of a bit of sweet content there.
Yeah, that homeschooling dad, one of the stars of yesterday. But for me, the stars of yesterday were the friends of Katie, who turned 12. It was her birthday yesterday. And of course, with social distancing, she couldn't have a birthday party. But this happened.
Who's that?
Happy birthday, Katie.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Simone. Thanks. Thanks, Simone. Oh, look at the roll of the window of the car. Thanks very much. Bye, Sophie. Happy birthday. Thanks, Deborah.
Wave it, everyone.
Thanks, my daughters. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that was Katie's 12th birthday yesterday. The girl with the big happy birthday sign through the sunroof. The hero we need, but not the one we deserve, in my opinion. Absolutely fantastic stuff.
It's class. The level of coordination that requires from people who are obviously living on top of each other, probably over the previous 3 or 4 days, to get that number of cars. Like, the thing went on for about a minute and 40 seconds of constant traffic passing by the gateway. Absolutely class. So fair play to Katie's parents there for organising that one. Padraig Harrington owns one that's been jumped up for me. I'm sure you've been following this. I'm sure everybody's been looking at the little golf tips that he's been doing. Absolutely brilliant, right? Like, the access to that level of detail from one of the great hive minds of golf at the minute. They are unbelievable little pieces of wisdom and great little nuggets. But for God's sake, Paddy Harrington, will you put some trousers on? I don't know if people were looking at the latest one yesterday, but I think we can take a look at it here. He's been out sort of doing a bit of chipping and giving people some helpful tips in his shorts.
Okay, today we're going to cover chipping from the rough. Technique is the exact same as we talked about earlier, with the put your alignment stick behind the ball so you're always out in front, you keep your weight in the left hand side, you're never backing up into your right side. So once you've got your technique right, then you hear this put out there a lot, try and play it like a bunker shot, try and hit 2 inches behind the ball. That's rubbish. If you try and hit 2 inches behind the ball in the rough, there's so much rough there, you'll probably end up starting hitting the grass 6 inches behind, which is far too much. Try and hit the ball cleanly, but realize and understand that that's never going to happen, that it's going to come out softer with some grass between the face and the ball, and that all depends on what type of grass you're playing out. So I've set up 3 different lies here. First of all, I've put a neutral lie where the grass is all growing straight up, the ball's sitting in there. That will just come out dead. You've got to hit it a little bit harder, but you do try and hit the ball first. Then I've put a lie where the grass is running towards the hole, towards the direction I'm going. That's going to come out very quick. Same length grass here, I've just stood it down. And then lastly, you have the grass growing away from the hole. So if people were walking off the back of the green and it's lying away, now that's the dangerous one. You're going to actually, even though that looks like a reasonable lie, you're going to have to hit that one pretty hard, because you're going to, a lot of that grass is going to stand up and get between the hole, the ball and the hole. Okay, so let's show it. So I'm going to hit this one neutral. I'm going to stay on my left-hand side. Yes, I'm going to have to hit it a little harder, just like so. Went for a bit safety. This is a tough chip shot. This one, the grass is going with me, so the ball will actually come out quite quick. I should be... See, I didn't even have to hit that anywhere near as hard. Okay? Again, you will still see on that one, even though the grass was with me, there's still grass on the club face. So there was definitely grass between the ball and the club face, but I was trying to hit it clean. And lastly, you got the grass against me, and I'm going to have to hit that one quite hard. And you can see a big chunk of grass got it up in the air. That's the one that's difficult when the grass is growing against you.
Like, brilliant, excellent tips from Paddy Harrington. I almost didn't hear anything he said. I was so distracted by his legs. Like, just put them away, Paddy.
What's your issue with his shorts?
It's like your teacher wearing when you see them wearing a pair of shorts, you're like, just not right. Like, and maybe it's also the type, but he's wearing those sort of American style baggy, almost basketball-ish shorts. Just put the legs away. Like, I know the weather is good and all, but nobody needs to see it.
I say ignore everything Adrian Barry says. Sun's out, legs out. I said sun's out, guns out yesterday. This is just getting too much. This weather is actually just going to my head. Let's we mentioned that Brett's Hardware and that teaching his kids how to say Boo Cork was the homeschooling moment of the week. But it does have a close contender. Darrow Breen on Twitter over the last couple of days has been telling us about this robot homeschooler who is my favorite homeschooler in the entire world. He was like, some of you will have seen this, which I posted yesterday, of a wildly inappropriate question in an online grammar lesson for 8-year-olds. And one of the examples was, use commas to punctuate this sentence. After a hard day at the office, I like to relax with a large gin. The comma, of course, it goes after the office, I assume. I'm not sure. I was going to fill in these myself just to work on my own grammar, but didn't get around to it yesterday. And then O'Brien says, from three questions down, more insight into somebody's internal life. Use commas to punctuate this sentence. I advise you, said the teacher, not to cross me again today. And then Dara says, before we judge, it appears it has been a tough year. Use commas to punctuate this sentence. Paulina, his wife of many years, had decided to go and live in Greece. And then number 8, use commas to punctuate this sentence. We go to Blackpool for the cuisine, not the weather. That one, I think, is the toughest one. Hard to actually see where you put the commas in that one. But I'll get cracky on that over the weekend.
Yeah, I presume it's after the cuisine. The most worrying thing about me, for me, on that gin one is, like, I like to relax with a large gin.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with relaxing. I just have I have visions in my head of kids watching this, or kids carrying out these exercises, and then becoming like the baby Carlos from The Hangover. You know the scene where he's like wearing the sunglasses and he's smoking a cigarette when he's in Zach Galifianakis's thing that he holds a baby in. I'm like, are all kids just going to be sitting there with like a big goblet of gin after completing these sentences? I sure hope so, for comic effect.
I mean, more like, surely a gin and tonic, like a large gin, baby Carlos. Not even baby Carlos would be getting stuck into that. That's
No, listen, straight gin all the way in these trying times, Adrian.
It would want to be good stuff. One slightly less comical thing that we wanted to point out that we came across.
No, this is very comical.
Well, maybe there's an element of that. Inside the game, insidethegames.biz is a really good source of information when it comes to athletics and track and field in general. This is a story here by Daniel Etchells about the Russian 2-time Olympic gold medal winning gymnast Svetlana Krukina. Some people rate her as the greatest of all time, right? She's about to go down in your estimation, hopefully, off the back of what we're going to tell you. She's been talking about the Russian ban, obviously, post from WADA deciding that they shouldn't be present at Tokyo 2020, obviously for various reasons of stretching the rules and regulations of doping. And so they've decided, obviously, that they weren't going to partake. So anyway, Svetlana decided that, you know, with everything going on, the best thing that she could do is weigh into the current global pandemic that's going to kill potentially thousands and maybe tens of thousands of people around the globe with the following, that I think it's all happened now because they shouldn't have offended Russia, including our athletes. There is a reason why there's a line in our national anthem, she says, that says our land is protected by the Lord. It was unnecessary to start this political show when such a deadly virus is being spread all over the world. I think this was God's punishment. Like, obviously there was several expletives that when I saw that the first time that I would love to repeat now, but I'll refrain from, other than to say, like, what is going on in this woman's head? Like, with everything that's going on at the minute, she's using this as an opportunity to blast WADA and Olympic chiefs about the idea that Russia aren't going to be invited to the Olympic Games. Like, it just makes no sense whatsoever.
Maybe WADA should have considered the line in the national anthem that says Russia's land was protected by our Lord before they banned them, Adrian.
I mean, I'd like to have a look at that that national anthem on and see how much more of it and all the other national anthems around the world that we should be taking literally. It's just absolutely ludicrous. And Svetlana would do better than to open her gob the next time and have a little bit of a think about what she's saying.
Let's move on to Mark in Bangkok at Thai Spicy Channel. Now, unfortunately, Mark in Bangkok and his fiance have had a tough couple of weeks because their wedding has been postponed for obvious reasons. They therefore had 115 chocolate lint bunnies as wedding flavors, as wedding favors. Time for a bunny wedding, of course. And as you can see, the images here, they've created a lint bunny rabbit wedding, complete with the veil for the soon-to-be wife of the other bunny rabbit there at the front. And as you can see, a little piece of paper folded for the priest at the top. And you got two little rings as well up on the altar. Absolutely top class. If you've got any spare lint bunnies, this is clearly the only course of action in the future.
Yeah, I do like the priest there. Is it a priest, do you think, or is it a humanist celebrant?
It's hard to know from the facial expression or from the get-up. There is kind of like a haunting nature to the fact that everybody looks the same in the crowd. Is it like one massive family, a lot of twins? Like, I guess rabbits are known for reproducing at a very rapid rate. So for
they probably
an actual
went into
rapid...
that room, and there was probably only 10 rabbits in the room to begin with. Yeah. When they went in for the ceremony, to be honest.
Exactly. It's not a great place to be, being a rabbit and trying to get invites for weddings, because really it's only immediate family who get invites by the look of things. One final thing which I want to wrap up on is James Blunt, who tweeted this yesterday, or sorry, a couple of days ago, saying, "During lockdown, while many other artists are doing mini concerts from their homes, I thought I'd do you all a favor and not." This is the big shame. We're not going to be able to properly celebrate the 15th anniversary of "You're Beautiful" by James Blunt because we're all going to be locked in our houses next month. I checked it this morning. It was May 2005 when our lives changed for the better.
I'm loving it. I'm loving it from James Blunt. Right, it is just kind of 8:15 on this Friday morning. Keith Andrews is going to join us next on OTB AM. First, let's hear from last night's football show, where the lads brought you an episode of the Classic Game Club, the latest installment. Nathan, Phil and Stephen Doyle looking back at Liverpool's 5-0 thumping of Nottingham Forest in 1988.
I think as well, at one stage, Kenny Dalglish is in the dugout and Copper walks by him. And he always gives him a look as if to say, "What are you doing? You're getting in my way." Just something I noticed, where obviously because of the way the dugout is, it's a little bit down on the ground. So a copper walking across you, or anyone walking across you, is going to have an impact on your view as well. I don't remember yellow cards being handed out. There was very few free kicks. And that's not like nothing to do with the fact that people say, "Oh, you know, men were tougher back then." And it was just the fact that two teams wanted to play football. There were two teams that played football in the right way. As you said earlier on, Stephen, the average age of the Forest team was 22. So, you know, Brian Clough was trying to develop them and get them to play a certain way. Obviously, Liverpool were all about pass and move. So there was very few fouls in the game.
Mm. The other thing as well, actually, it might be a little bit obvious, but player physiques back then, when you look at players nowadays, like, that was something that really struck me as well, is that, like, even Jan Mulby came on in the second half, and you're thinking there is no way he would get near a second division, or sorry, a League Two team nowadays, never mind playing in the top flight.
Ready for Euro 88 he was, by the way. The Danish manager was there to look at him.
Yeah.
And another thing that stands out when you're looking back at that era is how brilliant Liverpool were in the transfer market. And I know it's well known about what they did in the summer of 87 when they buy Houghton, Barnes and Beardsley, and like they get Barnes for 900 grand. But they just signed John Aldridge a few months before that as well. Like, they got it right. They sold Ian Rush and they brought in three outstanding players that
Yeah, that was Nathan and the lads in conversation about the Liverpool 5-0 thumping at Nottingham Forest from 1988. Ray Houghton also joined Nathan a bit later in the day to have some reflection on that. So you can check all of that out on offtheball.com. Now, also on the website over the last number of days, you'd have seen Seamus Coleman making a plea to the nation about staying put, staying indoors, self-isolation, social distancing, and also about the campaign for Feed the Heroes. And the man behind instigating that video was the former Republic of Ireland international Keith Andrews, who I'm delighted to say joins us on the line now. Keith, good morning to you.
Morning, Adrian. How are we?
All good. All good. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Keep myself to myself for obvious reasons. Tough times, yeah. as we know. So yeah, it was nice to do a little bit of good this week. Seamus has obviously produced a bit of magic with his video, and hopefully hit home with a lot of young people in particular.
Yeah, why did you feel the need to get involved, obviously, and get somebody like Seamus to? What was it that struck a chord with that specific thing that moved you so much to get involved?
It's. I'd like to say I'm all okay, and we are okay where we are, and all my family, nobody directly involved with me has been really, really affected by it yet. But it has deeply, deeply affected me. This I can't say I'm sat at home just cracking on and trying to find a little bit of order. It's really, really upset me what's going on, and you're kind of left helpless, not knowing what to do. We volunteered last week to the HSE, like a lot of other people did. We got an email back the last couple of days, so hopefully we can do something in the coming days or weeks. What that will be, I'm not so sure. But a friend of mine was involved in the catering side for this campaign, GoFundMe page, and was telling me a little bit about what they're doing based from Tallaght Stadium, feeding all the ambulance staff, the fire brigade, the nurses on the front line, delivering to the hospitals. So I just basically sent out a few texts to people that I thought, you know, would be good to get involved or do a little video or possibly donate. And who better than the captain of our team?
Yeah, you can check out all the details about Feed the Heroes, by the way, if you're watching and want to get involved. They're up on our social channels. We'll tweet them out again for you today. Just have a bit of a look at that. You speak about being moved by Keith. We've been discussing it a bit earlier in the show, and indeed over the last couple of weeks. Like, I've never known anything like it, and I've never known a country to be so well, amid absolute chaos, so well connected, and for communication now to be just on a different level, I find, than where we would have been a number of weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree. My wife said something to me yesterday, and she hit the nail on the head. It's like the first time everybody's been on the same side, and that goes across the world, doesn't it, in terms of trying to fight this thing. Money goes out the window. You know, I think it humbles you. It makes you think what is important in life, puts things into perspective like you wouldn't believe. And I do think it will change us as a nation, as a society going forward, and it'll bring us back a little bit, because I think you probably know I'm not a major fan of social media and certain advances in technology. I'm not at the forefront of that. And you know,
your Skype chat will tell us that, Keith. That's this.
Will it? Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
So, look, I think when you look back to when we were growing up and kids of 70s, 80s, you know, and I'm sure people will say it is similar in 50s and 60s, even more so. But, you know, there's certain areas of your childhood that you cherish. And I think maybe this time has brought us a little bit back to that, and brought us back to basics, brought us back to what we genuinely care about and what we need to appreciate a little bit more.
Yeah, there is that thing that, you know, maybe when all this is done, we go back to where we were, and that blissful ignorance of not having to have those great existential thoughts when you wake up every morning. But it is at the same time a great time to think and consider the people in your life that sometimes maybe you take for granted a little bit.
Yeah, very much so. We've got a lot of family in England, and it's very worrying, the fact that we don't know when we're going to see them again. I've got friends dotted around. A very good friend of mine lives in Italy, and near Florence, and his experience probably fast-tracked us into being a little bit more serious about it than most, I think, just hearing what he was going through, what was happening locally, not directly in his town, but a little bit further north, obviously, as we've seen in Lombardy. And that started to hit home a little bit when you know somebody, because look, we're all guilty of it. We all have a troker box. We all, like, when we're growing up, we all see the adverts on TV. But because things happen in the Middle East, the Far East, in Africa, we don't take things as seriously as when they're on our own doorstep. And it's taken this, obviously, to get into Europe. Then we really started to take it seriously. I've been deeply saddened, but I'd like to say I've kind of found a little bit of structure as to what to do and get up and get on with things. But I found that very difficult. I've tried to focus on a little bit of work. I've got pro license assignments that I do in the next couple of weeks, and I'm just tidying those up. But even trying to concentrate and stay away from the news and what's happening in the UK and America and wherever, it's been very difficult.
What part? I hear you loud and clear, and I think a lot of people will this morning very much identify with that. What part of it is, you've mentioned about being moved very deeply by it and upset by it, Keith? What's, if it's not such a stupid and obvious question, what aspect of it particularly is so moving?
Well, I think the fact that I've just touched on it, the fact that it's so close to home. My wife is a far nicer person and far kinder person than I am, and she's very empathetic in every walk of life. And sometimes I don't take it as seriously as I should. But this certainly has, this whole episode, this saga, going back a couple of weeks ago, I'd asked Sky not to travel over to do games at the weekends because I wasn't quite comfortable traveling and getting on airplanes and going through airports and what have you. So we started to take it seriously. We haven't seen anybody in practically 2.5 weeks since I was in Virgin a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, look, it's just all of it. Not knowing. I think the not knowing, certainly not knowing who might be affected by it very close to you, loved ones, family, friends. We've got elderly friends, neighbours, mum and dad, aunts and uncles, trying to look after those, but do it in a sensible way where we're just dropping off a bit of shopping. But you know, even when my postman drops off a little parcel or an envelope, I'm scared to death of that. I'm leaving that outside for a day or whatever. So it's difficult times.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one at that. And with the bacteria wipes out with the post, it's an absolutely ludicrous situation to be in. You mentioned about, obviously, your general run of things for you. You'd be over and back to the UK. You'd be watching a lot of games. I'm sure you'd be in contact with players. What are you doing to fill the days at the minute?
Yeah, like I mentioned to you there, I'm struggling. There's no doubt about it. We're trying to get a little bit of structure. We've done bits and bobs around the house. Obviously, cooking a lot more than we would because I'm here every single day. Where I'd be in England, probably 2 days of every week, covering games for Sky in particular. But you know, yesterday we did a bit of ready, steady, cook. What's going out of date? Let's try and make something out of it. One of them was successful, one less so. But I think there's going to have to come a stage where we do get up and it's a little bit more kind of work-like. But I'm not feeling too guilty about the fact that I haven't really got into a real structure just yet, because it's difficult to comprehend exactly what's going on. Like I said, just bits and bobs around the house. Gardens never look so good. Tommy actually rang me, your producer, in the middle of you showing those clips of Porrick Harrington. That's exactly what I was doing yesterday for about an hour and a half, just chipping into a bucket in the back garden. So I haven't quite got the green that he's got in his back garden, unfortunately.
That somehow does not shock me in the slightest, Keith, now that you're practicing the golf swing. That's what did you rustle up for Ready, Steady, Cook?
What did I do? Yeah, so we had pears and apples that were slightly going off. So I stuck those in a bit of butter on the pan, a bit of sugar, brown sugar, and then just came up with this topping of almond flour, a bit of granola, and yeah, that was it. But yeah, it was nice.
Nice. Nice. We'd Vinny Perth on the show during the week, and he was talking about keeping in touch with the Dundalk players, and like that, you know, by and large, they're a bunch of people who would go on away trips and kind of fill their time by watching a bit of Netflix. But he was like, listen, you can't, that's not something you can do. If this is going to last for weeks, months, you got to find something else. So he's sending them on recommendations around books, podcasts, whatever it might be. What's your level of communication with the under-21s at the minute? Is that just leave it to the clubs and leave them at it? Or is there an opportunity to connect with them and find out what's going on with them at the minute?
Yes, it's obviously the club's main area where they have to obviously make sure that they're okay on a day-to-day basis and then give them the training programs. We've no real right to that, I suppose, even though, strictly speaking, it's the international window. Of course, the game would have been last night, our game, and obviously the senior game, the playoff would have been last night. So no, just a couple of texts, basically, just making sure they're all right, just general well-being, but not getting directly involved in any of their training, because the clubs cater for that. So yeah, just the odd text and phone call just to to make sure the lads are doing okay?
I don't know how much there's very little, obviously, in the way of actual, almost no sport happening at the minute, and a few little interesting storylines coming out. There's a big meeting today between, I think, the PFA and the Premier League today, where they're going to discuss how they're going to tackle all of this financially. Obviously, no revenue coming into the club, so how do they tackle that issue? It seems like players have balked, was the expression that I read in relation to the idea of wage cuts, but that they would be open to the idea of wage deferrals. So effectively, the club will say, well, we'll pay you what we owe you, but we'll do it down the track a little bit. There's a fine balance, it strikes me, to be struck here from the players' point of view, because like the levels of sympathy, obviously, for what is generally a fairly well-to-do section of society, from a PR point of view, they'll need to manage this next few days and weeks as they look to protect their financial situations. I mean, in relation to the players specifically, they'll need to find that balance and not get on the wrong side of what's obviously a global pandemic.
Yeah, well, they need to do that's right, obviously. And so do the football clubs. It's not just the players. But there's a wide range of players. If you take England alone, like, you've got League Two players will obviously be on a fraction of what top Premier League players. So there's a huge spectrum there of players earning vastly different sums of money. So it is a fine balance. Can you expect someone who's on 800 quid a week, a grand a week, to be taking the same cut as someone who's on 200 grand a week? Then obviously not. And there's been certain things brought in England, obviously, to subsidise wages. And I'm sure certain players fall into that category. But for the big boys, the Premier League boys, the ones that are earning astronomical amounts of money, then they absolutely have to do the right thing, and they have to put things into perspective here and look at the bigger picture. I don't really care about football, I have to be honest, at the moment. I haven't even watched a game yet on TV, or not a live game, obviously, but gone back and watched previous games or some of our player clips. I'm not really feeling that at the moment. I'm sure there's a lot of players like that, and all this talk about when they resume behind closed doors, etc. There'll be a lot of scared players out there, scared about their welfare and their family's welfare, because I mentioned before, I asked Sky not to go over that weekend, and thankfully they were okay with that. And that was a little bit before England certainly were taking this very seriously. So players in the main have to kind of do what they're told. But I certainly wouldn't be comfortable going back too soon into an environment where I wasn't comfortable with. And the whole stress that they've been through, you don't know what type of scenarios they've had, apparently foreign players, if they've got families that they haven't been able to see, and they've been cocooned into just the house with their wife, kids, girlfriend, whatever it is. It's obviously a difficult time, so we can't expect them just to pick up the baton and carry on as if nothing's happened either.
Yeah, it is very difficult to get away from that fact that how pointless the Arrigo Sacchi quote, that football is the most important of the least important things. It is very difficult to get away from the backdrop of what's going on at the minute to talk any real sport. When you're having those conversations, Keith, can I ask you, as we look to wrap up, just because we've definitely been having them in this house as well, in relation to the overall existential aspect of what's happening at the minute, what sort of conclusions, if any, are you coming to about the general, when you're picking through those conversations in that meaningful way about the state of the society and the global pandemic that we have at the minute, what sort of, if any, conclusions are you reaching
about where it's going or how long?
Just in relation to your own the thing that I've sort of definitely struggled with initially was trying to make sense of the whole thing and trying to put your finger on how to work through it, because I we know each other a little bit, and I believe that you're the sort of person who would probably like to take a bit of a lead in a situation like this, that you're probably looking to provide answers for others. Yet I know in my own instance, you're asking yourself the most fundamental of questions that you're struggling to answer.
Yeah, look, and I think I don't want to get all political, but I've been glued to the TV for the last couple of weeks and watching how leaders in different countries are dealing with this. And again, I don't really want to bring it to a sport analogy, but you know, when the chips are down and you're struggling as a team, in a game, in a season, whatever it is, you look for leaders, don't you? You look for the captain materials, you look for the manager, you look for that voice of authority, that person who reassures you Now, I have to say, sitting in Ireland in the last couple of weeks, I'm a lot more comfortable with how we've dealt with it as a nation than England has. And then initially I thought Trump, okay, the way he dealt with it, he came out with all the good news, great, but then it's kind of reverted to Trump in recent days and the usual. You want leadership, you want strong leadership. And in terms of what answers I can give, you do feel helpless. You don't know what way it's going to go. And even in our own household, you know, we're just, you're getting by day to day, and you would like to do more than what you are actually doing. But obviously you've got to stay indoors. Obviously you've got to be very, very careful. We know all the guidelines. But I'd like to think at some stage I'll be able to do my bit in some way.
Yeah, well, look, you're doing your bit this morning by being so open and honest with us, and really appreciate that. And before we let you go, Keith, we do try and ask everybody that we've on for their isolation recommendation. You've already given us a bit of Ready, Steady, Cook, so I'm not sure where we can go from there. And I also know that we're absolutely springing this one on you, so if you haven't anything to hand, we'll come back to you. But in terms of like a book, podcast, movie, box set, what have you got for us?
Yeah, like I haven't even touched Netflix yet. I have to be honest, we haven't even scratched the surface in terms of what we might watch in the next few weeks. So I think we'll be all right on that front. But when I was speaking to Tommy, your producer, yesterday, I mentioned, you know, in terms of feeling a little bit helpless into where we're going with this, I've just recently got involved with a company called Coerver Coaching, C-O-E-R-V-E-R Coaching. And they're launching in Ireland. It's for kids, basically. It's a coaching scheme. And it's basically primarily looking at younger kids from the age of 5, 6, 7 up to 14, 15, 16. And it's all about ball mastery. It's all about perfecting the touch of a ball, different skills, the elements of that. And they're basically they're launching. They were due to launch. I was supposed to do something a couple of weeks ago, but for obvious reasons, that's been put on the back burner. But they're offering a free service for all kids to go online and get little tutorials where they can go into the back garden and do a little one-to-ones and work on little skills. So it's something that I used a little bit. I don't confess to know everything about it because I've only just got involved in the company. I used it a little bit when I started coaching in academies in England. Certain coaches would have used methods of it, but this is the full-on Coerver Coaching. So if people, families out there want to go on this, go on, have a little look, free access to it, which is, it's going to do no harm, and spend an hour or two in the garden.
Yeah, it's Coerver.ie, C-O-E-R-V-E-R.ie, if you want to check out a bit more detail on that. Keith, look after yourself. We're going to catch up with you and on, no doubt, and take care of yourself. Chat to you soon.
Look after yourself. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Cheers. Keith Andrews on the line there. Pretty open and honest conversation with Keith, as it always is, and hopefully that's helped you make a little bit of sense of everything that's going on in these crazy times. Right, it's 8:38 on this Friday morning. It is time for us to get into our very first OTB Kids Takeover. We're going to give the stuck-at-home kids of Ireland the chance to interview some of the biggest stars in Irish sport, and we've started with none other than the Irish rugby legend, Brian O'Driscoll. You could have asked him anything you wanted, from what pyjamas he wears to what age it is that it's acceptable to wear highlights in your hair, which might have been very appropriate. Obviously, all you had to do was send your video of your kids asking the question, get them to introduce themselves first, WhatsApp it to Off the Ball at 0879 180 180, 0879 180 180. And if you didn't get a chance to ask Brian a question, don't worry, we're going to be giving you another chance with another great sports star very, very soon. So stay tuned for that. Have a listen to how the OTB Kids Takeover with Brian O'Driscoll went on Off the Ball.
Hello, Brian. My name's Tommy and I'm 6 years old. And who's your favourite superhero?
My favourite superhero? I think I'd probably go old school and just go with, like, Superman, would I?
Hi, I'm Rowan from Euros Rugby Club, under 12s. I was just wondering, how did you ever pick yourself back up if you ever doubted your ability?
I've doubted my ability lots of times. I think it's reminding yourself what you are capable of. And we've all had great moments, you know, be it on the training park or out playing games. And if you're capable of doing that once, well, why can't you do it lots of times?
Hi, Brian. I play rugby and I'm not sure what position I'm going to be in when I grow up. So my question is, what types of kicks should I practice while I'm old school in the park in my spare time?
my question is, are girls better than boys at rugby?
Some girls are definitely better than boys at rugby. I think you know, it's such an important aspect, you know, in with the 20 by 20 initiative this year, that girls have role models to see and dream to aspire to. And the first one, I didn't always play centre. I didn't actually play centre until I was 18 for the first time. A little bit of out half in college as well. And I think those different positions are all about developing your skill set. I would have played scrum half when I was 15, 16, on the wing when I started out as a 12-year-old. I played 15 for the first time ever for the Lions back in 2001. So I think it's really important that you don't pigeonhole, that you don't just pick one position.
Hello, Brian. My name is Robert O'Leary. What's your favourite stadium that you played in outside Ireland now? And what's your least favourite stadium that you played outside Ireland?
Good question. Favourite outside of Ireland, definitely the Millennium Stadium. Loved playing in the Millennium Stadium. It's just an incredible atmosphere.
Hi, I'm John Murphy, and my question for you is, do you find it hard criticising players while commentating because you got criticised yourself playing rugby?
I do find it hard criticising players. I think when I was a player, I knew when I had a poor game and I knew when the criticism was going to come. And all I could ever ask was that pundits didn't make it personal. But when I go and I'm critical for someone, it's only about their performance. And I try and spin it a particular way as well, you know, where someone doesn't throw a good pass. Maybe in the early days I would have said that's a poor quality pass for Jonathan Sexton, whereas nowadays I might say that's a very uncharacteristic pass from Jonathan Sexton. So there's lots of ways of trying to be able to soften it.
The OTB Kids Takeover, Episode 1, Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah, that is the OTB Kids Takeover, and that will air with Brian on Off the Ball at 2 o'clock today on all of our channels, so you can check it out on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all of those / Off the Ball, and up on OTB Sports Radio as well. And you'll also be able to hear it on Off the Ball tonight from 7 o'clock. So do keep your comments coming into us, and there's plenty of them, 087-9180-180. And indeed, that's the destination too if you want to get involved in future OTB Kids Takeovers. If you want to get your kid to ask a sporting great a question, just send it in and intro it at the start as well. Now, we're turning to something slightly different. I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Noel Healy, Dublin footballer, of course, four-time All-Ireland winner, four-time All-Star as well, former Player of the Year, and much more importantly, I suppose, at these times, an intensive care doctor and anaesthetist as well at Temple Street. Noel, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
Busy times, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's busy. Kind of strange times, I suppose, at the moment. It's unusual.
Is all of your work at the minute coronavirus related?
No, it's not. I suppose, you know, normal healthcare problems and conditions don't go away, which is kind of something to keep in the back of mind as well. I think, you know, it's a kind of trap that you need to be careful not to fall into. But yeah, it's definitely to the forefront of our mind, and to all of the procedures that we're doing definitely is kind of making sure that we're protecting ourselves and protecting our patients as well.
Yeah. How long? I mean, I know I've read some pieces with you, and the general assumption from everything you hear from frontline healthcare workers at the best of times that days can be very long. Has that changed for you just yet in terms of the length of those days, or is that something that's coming down the track, do you think?
No, I suppose at the moment things are just starting to kind of get busier. And I suppose, you know, as I said, in Ireland, we've kind of had a bit of luck and, you know, we've had a little bit of time to prepare. So there's been an awful lot of emphasis on making sure that we're taking rest. And, you know, that's been great as well. We've kind of changed our shifts and things like that to make sure that people are getting enough time off, because we don't really know what's coming down the line and you know, how things are going to get. So, no, like, you know, we've kind of just all been working together to try to give each other as much of time off as we feel we need, like, if, you know, that we're not kind of being flogged, I suppose.
Yeah. There was, obviously, people are following the numbers and this thing. There was 250 new cases yesterday. It brings it to, I think, around about 2,000 now overall, or just short of it, and the expectation that we're going to be at 9,000 or maybe over that in less than a week's time. What's the, in terms of the anticipation of that that you mentioned. Is it something that you're thinking about that's in the back of your mind, or is it very much just to focus on what needs to be done today?
Yeah, look, I suppose it has to be to the forefront of your minds. And I suppose for the last 2 weeks and maybe even 3 weeks, you know, just a little bit before, I suppose the schools were closed and kind of people started really taking this thing seriously. You know, I was talking to colleagues in other hospitals and even to some of the girls on the team that would have worked in different hospitals, and you could see the changes that were happening and the planning that was going ahead and kind of trying to get different equipment in and making plans to kind of, you know, change wards and to cross-skill different, I suppose, medical specialities into looking after more respiratory illnesses and more intensive care skills and things like that. So you do kind of have to always be forward planning, but I suppose, you know, you kind of have to look after what you have in front of you as well. So it's just kind of a little bit of both, just, you know, being aware of the plans that are in place and the infrastructures that are put in place, and, you know, where you might need to be and things you might need to upskill yourself in, but obviously, you know, not forgetting that you've patients to look after as well.
Noel, you mentioned there that there's obviously been a big effort in terms of getting the correct volume of equipment in over the last couple of weeks. How is that process in terms of what you're seeing? Are you well equipped at the moment, or is there still more that needs to be done?
Well, I suppose in Temple Street, we're in a bit of a different situation in terms of, you know, looking at the data and things like that from the hospitals. It doesn't seem to affect children, thankfully, as much as it does seem to affect the older adults. So, you know, we're kind of just, I suppose, making sure if kind of see, you know, if there's things that we can do to help other hospitals and help alleviate pressure from that point of view. And, you know, if we can give our skills elsewhere, or even advice and things like that elsewhere.
What, in relation to your own, you mentioned the cross-skilling, well, in relation to your own training and experience around ICU and the anesthesiologist aspect of it as well, how appropriate to your own experience are respiratory complications, or is there a bit of an upskilling in that regard as well now?
Well, I suppose for us, like, that would kind of be what we'd be used to dealing with in intensive care, particularly around the winter season and the flu season. We'd be well used to kind of dealing with an awful lot of people who would have respiratory complications from, you know, flu or, you know, different infections. So it's in terms of the pathologies and the sicknesses and the respiratory conditions that we're dealing with, it's not something that would be hugely unusual to us. I suppose the problem is the volume that it comes in, which is kind of the main problem. And then I suppose there's always this kind of the different fear in that. It's not, you know, when you're at work, usually you close the door and you leave it, and you can almost even forget about that day. But I suppose you leave it and you go out, and everything that I was talking about on the news is this. And, you know, I've never heard so many people talk about ventilators and things like that. You know, even my own go home, like, you know, speaking to family, they're asking about it. And, you know, even just the fear that you could bring something home or bring something to other people in terms of the infection as well. So from that point of view, I suppose it's totally different to anything that we've ever experienced.
Yeah, like even on that point, I read a piece during the week, I can't remember which paper it was in, with a doctor who was saying, you know, that this wasn't something that you invite on yourself. You trained to be a doctor because it's something that was attractive to you at that time. It's obviously generally decently well paid. It's can be a decent lifestyle. Obviously, you get to help people and save people's lives. But putting your own life at risk is not necessarily something that you're explicitly signing up to when you go down this route. Is that something that you're concerned about, Noel, in terms of the possibly contracting this thing at the front line?
You know, it's funny, like, I suppose, I think, you know, even just from talking to colleagues and college friends and even family members who are in, you know, healthcare professions, like, I think especially when it started, a lot of us probably would have been in the situation where we had treated a patient who would subsequently later had tested positive. So, you know, the usual, I suppose, procedure would be that you'd contact occupational health, and they'd, you know, most times they'd kind of just do a contact tracing and try to deem, you know, what risk you'd be. So I was in that situation last week, and I, you know, went home from work, didn't go into work the next day. We tried to figure out whether I was able to go back. And, like, my first thought and the first that a lot of people have, you know, it's absolutely not. God, I'm worried that I'd get sick with it. It's, you know, who have you met in the past few days that you could have passed it on to, or, you know, things like that. And I suppose that's where the kind of social distancing thing kind of really comes to the forefront of your mind. And also just even kind of a little bit of a sense of guilt that, you know, are you going to be off work for 2 weeks that you can't go, you know, back and help your colleagues? You know, have you call shifts that somebody else is going to have to put work on? Are you putting, you know, your own team and work under a little bit of pressure? So I think you've seen kind of from the people who have come home, the people who have signed back in, that I don't think that's something really that's to the forefront of our minds. I think everybody just wants to help, which is, you know, it's brilliant. But obviously, you know, it is important that we look after ourselves and work, you know, from a physical point of view and I suppose a mental point of view, but also just making sure that we're protecting ourselves and, you know, we're educated and using the right equipment as well.
From that mental point of view, Noel, have you managed to decompress over the last couple of weeks? Obviously, it's a bit trickier now with not being able to have any organized training when it comes to football.
Yeah, I know. You lose that little bit of balance, I suppose. You know, as I said, you leave work and you turn on the radio or you flick on your phone and it's just the same thing over and over and over again. Statistics, figures, pictures from around the world. So it is very hard to decompress. So I suppose you just have to get a little bit inventive with it, you know, reading books, things like that. I suppose, you know, exercise is obviously still massively important, just purely from a decompression and a relaxation point of view.
The country is very squarely behind the work that you're doing, Noel, and that your colleagues are doing as well. I'm sure it hasn't been lost on you. How much the country came out last night at 8 o'clock and applauded, obviously. I did wonder about the, like, all of us plebs out clapping on the doorstep. To, you know, it feels like a great sort of community activation that gives us all a bit of crumbs of comfort. I wonder what sort of an impact it would have for somebody like yourself, whether it means anything at all.
Look, it's lovely. I was actually like out in my back garden, and all the neighbours were clapping, and you could hear kind of cars beeping and things like that. And it is lovely. I suppose you can see it in the, you know, that Feed the Heroes, I suppose, movement that's going as well. And I suppose we're kind of lucky in some ways is that we can feel like we're doing something in terms of we go to work and we feel like we're helping and contributing towards it. And I suppose, you know, everybody just wants to help and everybody just wants to do their bit. So I think that's where that comes from. But no, look, it's lovely. But I think, as it's kind of been said before, you know, it's not going to be the healthcare workers that are going to solve this or to you know, slow this process. I know they use the kind of the line, the phrase, the frontline staff and things like that. And I think, you know, it's something that's kind of come to the fore a little bit more, is that it's in, like, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, it is in everybody's hands, and that, like, it's, you know, we can only treat people that get the disease. But as Catherine Motherway had put on Primetime, you know, what you need to do is just not get this virus, you know, be intelligent, be sensible in who you're meeting and how many people you're kind of meeting. You know, it's the simple things, washing your hands, you know, cleaning your surfaces. Just, I mean, it's not going to be the doctors and nurses and the porters and care assistants that are going to solve this problem.
Yeah. At the same time, I know that the modesty won't allow you to say it, but you are literally putting your lives on the line for this as well. So that's very much appreciated. I presume there's a camaraderie aspect to it as well. Like, it's almost maybe, without trying to be too cliched about it, but akin to the football side of things, I presume that amongst you, it's very much in the trenches and we're at the front line of this thing and everybody's pulling together.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been, you know, it's been really nice. There's a great atmosphere in the hospital between everyone, just kind of, yeah, totally just working together to look after each other, you know, making sure that we're all safe, and even just people checking in with each other in different hospitals. Like, I've a sister who's a nurse in James's, who had previously worked in the oncology day ward there, but who's been redeployed to the ED. So kind of just checking in and see how she's getting, you know, getting on. I've never been in contact so frequently with different college friends, just to see how they're getting on in different hospitals and in different specialities, and if they have any questions about anything, or, you know, if I have any questions with them. So it's been brilliant, even just like checking in with people, seeing how they're getting on, and just even sharing, you know, different education bits as well. It's nice. It is a great atmosphere. And I suppose, you know, when you do get the free lunch and things like that into work, it does give you a little bit of a pick me up, just to kind of know that people are really appreciative of, you know, that you're looking after their loved ones.
Yeah, well, definitely the country is very much behind you. They all mentioned the football a little bit earlier on there. For 13 years, I think, Anuel, if I'm right, or thereabouts, would have been at this point of the year, obviously ramping things up from a Dublin perspective. You may not even have time to miss it, I suppose, at the minute, with everything going on.
I know you absolutely would miss it. You'd miss, you know, I think the dressing room is kind of the one thing that you'd miss, even the competition and stuff, and just the bit of fun with the girls. And yeah, you know, when the weather is getting nice and you're doing your own bit of skills or a bit of runs around the place, you'd love for it to be in a match. You know, it's just, the weather's kind of picking up. But I suppose it pales a bit into the background at the moment with everything that's going on, unfortunately.
You've given very clear instructions to the country there in terms of what we need to do to try and beat this thing. Anything else that you want to say before we wrap?
No, not at all. No, just thanks to everybody so far for doing their bit. And hopefully, I know it's going to be a little bit of a long road for everyone. But, you know, it's been really positive to see everybody, you know, buying into this. And hopefully, you know, we can get through it.
Yeah, well, listen, keep strong, keep safe, keep well. Thanks so much. I know it's crazy busy time. Thanks so much for taking the call this morning.
Not at all. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Dublin footballer Noel Healy, Dr. Noel Healy on the line there. Crazy time right around the country, particularly for our frontline healthcare workers. Really pleased that Noel could take the time to have a chat with us there this morning. Owen makes us all feel a little bit insignificant in what it is we do.
Yeah. Absolutely, completely insignificant, really. Like, I mean, there's only small things we can do. I mean, like, it's fantastic to hear, like, people signing up to the HSE, even on a voluntary basis, like Keith there, even just donating a few quid to feed the heroes. There are little things that we can do to make us less significant on a day-to-day basis, and they've been well publicised over the last few days, and even just slowing this whole thing down, as Noel said there, as a lot of the experts have been saying on national media platforms over the last couple of weeks. We know what we have to do. We just have to stay away from other people, not allow this thing to spread, and that will make their job somewhat easier. It won't be easy. It won't be easy whatsoever, and it's going to get tougher, but we can perhaps ease it a little bit for them.
Yeah, such a huge part to play. Right, it is 8:57 on this Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM, which is the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. You can get in contact with us 087-9180-180 and keep your comments coming in. We have Eric Donovan up next on OTB AM, but first, lose yourself in this Ronan O'Gara, Peter Stringer, 09 Grand Slam treat, and that drop goal.
A Grand Slam game, Wales 2009, Peter. So you're over the ball. You presumably know exactly where Ronan wants the ball. Talk us through it from there.
Yeah, it's I suppose for the whole game, I'm sitting on the bench really, yeah. And I come on, you know, to 15-20 minutes to go, and it's, you're in an environment, and I suppose I've come off the bench in quite a bit in towards the end of my career, and it's a different dynamic. If it's kind of during the season, you're thinking, okay, I got to make an impact, I got to try and get a pass in, I got to get a kick in. I got to try and get a little bit of a break in. I got to try and show somebody something that gets me picked for the next week. This was a different dynamic. You're in a big game, high pressure situation. It's as big as it gets. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's got to be about composure. It's got to be about doing the right things for the team. And my whole mindset completely changed. And understanding, obviously, we'd been in that position before in Cardiff and a few years previous. So that game where there was one drop goal and Raj got another one and we beat Wales as well, but this was about just delivering one pass in a pressure situation, something that I had hit Raj with a ball I don't know how many times in my career, but this had to be on the money. And again, like Raj mentioned, the key point for me was getting that ball on the right hand side of his body. And like you're looking at the drop goal in recent times, you probably look at it, and it's probably a fraction high if I'm kind of being over critical about it. But I think the main point was that the ball hit him on the right hand side, and he didn't have to shift it over from his left to his right because of the Welsh guys coming off the line. But it was a case where I nearly hit Paulie with the ball when he nearly got in the way, and he was a little bit apologetic about it. That's the last fella you want to hit in the drop goal scenario, but waited for him to get out of the way, hit Raj, and he get, look, you know, credit to him again, stepped up to the mark and just nailed it.
And were you, generally, when you're in kind of continuous motion, nerves don't really attack you. But I guess you had a time was probably slowed down. You would have had a second over that ball where you're looking back at Ronan. Did you feel nervous in that moment, or were you fairly okay?
No, you don't, Joe. To be honest, you don't have time to think about it in these situations. You're so familiar in your surroundings because of what you've done before and your time kind of on a pitch or standing over a ball. I've been doing it since I was 6 years of age. So it's not a case where you're kind of panicking. Mm. You know, I've thrown that pass a million times. Yes, it's a pressure situation, but you don't have time to think about it, you know. But there was no panic in that moment. You know, there was no, you know, the Welsh defence weren't going to get off the line.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the ball was still in the ruck. So I had that kind of second. I had that kind of time to get Paulie out of the way, get flat.
Yeah,
Eric. Speaking after that, then it was kind of, at times it was kind of, we'll kiss and make up. So some days there would be no one, obviously, that had to kiss and make up. Some days you could have six couples having a kiss. But then it was literally, you know, it wasn't a peck, or with the coronavirus now, everything will change. But it was actually, it was a kiss on the lips, which was quite interesting and awkward.
You were kissing a lot.
There was a cue for you, was there?
But I think that is so important too, that it's left on the pitch.
Yeah.
Or the times I got ultra, ultra ratty, I probably like to think Strings, and you hopefully will say this, that I'd send a text and go, can we meet or have a coffee about this? Because I'm sure there'll be further Stewart's inquiry into this performance tonight.
You respect the guy for... You know how much it means to somebody, and like, it'd be worse if someone laughs it off. And I've been in environments in my latter stages of my career where I've been in environments and it's annoyed me that people have just kind of laughed things off if passes aren't accurate. You know, you know how much it means to someone when they react in that way, and that's what really was special about the group that we had. And you know, obviously, you know, you could see how much it meant to Raj and the way he was. He just wanted the best out of everybody around him.
Mm.
Peter Stringer and Ronan O'Gara there on last night's Off the Ball. Full piece available on our YouTube channel or in our rugby podcast series. Delighted to say now, at 2 minutes past nine on this Friday morning, we're joined on the line by boxer Eric Donovan. He's going to be providing our lunchtime workout on Off the Couch a little bit later on all our Off the Ball social channels. How are you getting on, Eric?
How are you going, Owen? How are you?
Very well, thanks. Good, good. How are you getting on? What's the last couple of days been like for you, the last couple of weeks been like for you?
Oh, it's just really been mental, really, hasn't it? Don't think any of us, well, I didn't anyway. Initially, at the start, I never thought it was going to be as bad as it's turning out to be. And, you know, maybe it was a bit of ignorance on my part or whatever, but I just didn't, you know, even a little bit of joking about it and everything. But, Jesus, it just came in like a tidal wave. And but, you know, we've certainly... adjusted to it now, and you know, we're following all the procedures and the guidelines from the HSE and the government, and you know, we're spending a lot of time at home and just doing our part, you know. I mean, like, this is, it's not a lot to ask for people to stay at home, you know. It's, we can all do that, but you know, you just, you know, your thoughts and prayers and all be with the medical staff and the medical personnel and doctors and everything. And just to see the doctors coming back from Perth yesterday in Australia and coming from all over the world, it just shows a incredible acts of heroism, and you know, you can't not be inspired by that.
What does the tidal wave involve when you mention that?
The news is something I never really watch. That wasn't really one for watching the news, and I'm watching the 1 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock news, the 9 o'clock news. I'm just constantly watching it now, and just seeing yesterday that the stats are gone, you know, cases up over 500,000, you know what I mean? So that's all in just kind of space of a fortnight, really. I know it's going on a lot longer, but it's you know, it's multiplying at a serious rate, and very alarming. Mm.
Do you find that that's something that you're able to manage and cope with watching the news all day? Because I know speaking to a lot of people and speaking for myself, really, it's kind of been a situation of, right, let's limit watching our news till, I don't know, after the HSE figures come out and watch, I don't know, half an hour of news or an hour of news and sort of limit it in that way. Because I think describing it as a tidal wave is a perfect way of putting it, that it can become a little bit overwhelming for all of us here to actually see what's going on constantly.
Yeah, like I can manage fairly well. Like, look, we live in the countryside and it's lovely that we can get out the back and go for little walks. And, you know, my two sons are with me as well now for this duration, so they're staying with us. And, you know, we do a bit of homeschooling every day. Well, Monday to Friday anyway, we try and follow a routine, you know. And, you know, even we try and get enough physical activity in as well. You know, yesterday we had a game a game of football yesterday, Laura and my fiance Laura and Jack, my son Jack versus myself and young Troy, and it was like the old days. We had a game to the death. It was up to 10 and we won 10-9, me and Troy. But it's just one of those things we probably wouldn't have done because of this, you know. And you know, and I had to teach my eldest son Jack, who's 14, I had to teach him to hold the pads up last night because I can't even get to train with my coach. So Jack is doing the pads at me last night. I'm doing a lot of training at the moment, but I'm not getting to throw out my hands. I'm not getting to, you know, work on my boxing, you know, and, you know, keep the hands in flow. And so Jack stepped up to the plate last night. He's done a really good job as well. Like,
fair play, because it did strike me that if you have the equipment at home and you're living with somebody, actually holding up the pads and putting a bit of pad work actually is a very safe course of action and a fairly strenuous way of getting a bit of exercise in over the next little while. And for you, it's obviously training for your next fight.
Yeah, initially I was supposed to box on the 24th of April in Belfast, but that show has been postponed like many others. So really don't know where we're going to be at, or, you know, what's next. I suppose it does put a lot of things into perspective, you know. It does make people stop and think and reflect. And, you know, as much as I'm passionate about boxing and sport in general, you know, there's a lot more things that are far more important. And if there's anything kind of positive to come out of all of this, I think it's certainly got a lot of people to reflect on life again and reassess their views and their perspective on the meaningful things in life, you know.
Definitely. I think that's the case for a lot of people. When you have those moments of reflection, what's coming to mind for you and what are you thinking about?
Just being how much I can be, I would just say, kind of disconnected, and how much I can be disconnected and maybe a bit selfish in terms of, I know that most top athletes need to be selfish anyways, and, you know, that's part and parcel of trying to achieve extraordinary things in life. But it's just dawned on me that, you know, there's probably times where I'm not using my time wisely or not spending the spare time that I have with the people that matter the most. It also reinforces the amount of time that I give to technology as well. You know, spend way too much time scrolling through nonsense. And there's probably a little bit of, not dependence, but probably borderline addiction as well when it comes to social media and stuff like that. You'd be just scrolling, and you'd be missing a lot of what's going on around you with the people that are closest to you. So I'm trying to spend the time here with Laura and my two kids, trying to be present as much as I can, trying to do really good quality things together, you know, go for nice walks, go for a run, do workouts together. We do circuits and that out the back together, play football, you know, and then some, you know, match games, and, you know, we do schoolwork together and, you know, that type of stuff. It's really good. It's crazy because Jack's preparing for his junior cert and Troy is well, Tri's supposed to be making his communion this year, so it's a big year. Me and Laura we're due to get married in July, so it's a huge year for us all, and we don't really know where we stand now.
That's an interesting point that you make. We'll come back to the wedding in just a moment, but just to go back to what you said at the top there about high performance athletes needing to be so selfish. It's so true. You need this singular goal and everything else needs to fit around you to ensure that you achieve that goal. Whereas now the situation that we're in, we all need to be a little bit selfless. We've all needed to change the way that we live for the greater good. The individual is now hugely unimportant, which is a sea change, I'd imagine, from being a high performance athlete in an individual sport.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but just recently I changed management and changed direction in my career, because I felt like I might have reached as far as I could go. We might have went as far as we could go together with Boxing Ireland promotion. So I've moved on to Mark Dunlop and just newly signed a contract with him to work as my agent, as my manager, and I've also just moved into the top 10 in the European rankings. And you know, most people that know me know that the European title has always been my goal, especially after being retired for 3 years, from 2013 to 2016 I was retired, and when I turned pro in 2016 I said, wow, you know, an Irish title would be something special. I got the Irish title and then I raised the bar. I said, Jesus, a European title is definitely within my, it's within my grasp, and it's something that I'm well capable of achieving. And now in the latest rankings, I've just moved into the top 10. So it's making all of that sound very achievable. But then this happens, and it kind of just puts things in perspective. You know, you can get carried away with yourself. And look, I still have that dream. I still have that burning desire. I'm training every single day. And I'm hoping that, when all of this when we get out the other side of this, that I can just continue on this journey and try and close in on that title shot. I was hoping that before this COVID-19 crisis came about, I was hoping that somewhere in around the end of 2020, that shot could become a reality. Now it could be pushed back a little bit, maybe into 2021. But I really don't mind when it's going to be, if I knew I was going to get the shot.
Yeah, and I guess it's all up in the air. We really just don't know when things are going to happen at this point. It could be the summertime, it could be the autumn time, it could be early next year before things get up and running. We just don't know. And kind of one of the final points I wanted to ask you on this particular subject was when you were in with Joe and Andy, I think it was April last year, fantastic interview for anybody who hasn't seen it. It's worth just Googling Eric Donovan into YouTube and watching that interview back. One of the lines that I remember from that, he said, I'm a boxer and I'm only a boxer. And that was the situation that you put forward when you struggled with mental health in the past, that when the success started to wane, or when you didn't have a successful moment, for example, as a boxer, that almost was a challenge to your whole identity because you saw yourself as a boxer and a boxer alone. At the moment, for a lot of athletes, that might be a similar situation where they see themselves as an athlete and an athlete alone. But now they're not. Now they're something else. Now they've got to keep themselves fit and all that sort of thing. But they have a very different role to play in society, which poses huge challenges.
Absolutely. And, it can be very detrimental to your whole well-being and your overall health. Like thinking of yourself as just, one particular pigeonholing yourself into just this kind of area, like where I just felt like boxing was my everything. An outcome of a match would determine my whole well-being, it affected me so, so bad that, I was nothing without boxing. It dominated my conversations. It dominated my life. And I lost myself. I lost a sense of self and I lost who I was and all that kind of stuff. Didn't know much about my own values or morals. It was just really unhealthy. And when I started to discover a bit more about Eric as a human being, and I realised that boxing is just something that I'm extremely good at, but it's not everything. You know, when you start to see your qualities, your uniqueness, your authenticity, and even now spending, they usually come every second weekend, but now they're here for the last 2 weeks, and they're going to be here for hopefully another few weeks. And while this is going on, I'm even seeing how loved I am, you know, in their eyes, and you know how important I am, and you know I started to see all of that kind of stuff, and I wouldn't have seen that before, you know, the goodness that we have, and you know, boxing just became everything, and it's not anymore, and that's a good thing. But I look at boxing with a different perspective now. I look at it like I've been given a gift as a young kid. I've been, you know, we're all struck with a talent or a gift in some way, shape, or form. And mine was boxing, and it's up to me to honour that gift and to give it my fullest and maximise my full potential and see where it takes me. And I got lost with that kind of vision throughout my probably teenage years up onto mid-20s, got lost with that. But, you know, now I'm in a really good place and enjoying life. And I'm also doing a lot of online fitness workouts every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 4 o'clock for anybody that's interested, for family members, for adults, for kids. You know, it's everybody can do it. And it's on Eric Lily White Lightning Donovan Facebook page. And if anyone is interested in getting involved, you're more than welcome. We're back up today at 4 o'clock. So looking forward to that.
Brilliant. And you've been getting, I understand, an international audience, people all over the world tuning in for these sessions.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, you know, my youngest son, Troy, as well, he'd done one of those sessions with me last week. And it was just proof to show that, you know, we can all do it, like, you know. And it was just a nice, special moment. And there's as you said, there, Owen, there's people tuning in from all over the world. And that's fantastic. And in this way that we're all disconnected for the better good, you know, the online classes brings us all together, and my fiance Laura does a little bit of online commentary of the class and gives, you know, all the kids a shout out and you know, mentions where they're from, and you know, it's really good. It's an inclusive thing, and it's a very good, positive and healthy thing for us all, especially with the doom and gloom and, you say, the news and the negativity, and you know, trying to give people a little lift. And it's more important now, your physical activity and fitness, than ever before.
Absolutely. So you're on Off the Couch. It's our lunchtime show here on Off the Ball this afternoon. What have you got planned for the Off the Ball viewers?
Oh, yes. So that's going to be a little workout that I normally do. Well, when I started out Eric Donovan's Boxercise and Fitness, I can see it there on the screen. When I started Eric Donovan's Boxercise and Fitness, I didn't really have much equipment. So I had to start using, improvising and using, you know, ways of using your own body weight for different exercises and just changing up the routines and ones that can shock the system. So that one there that I'm looking at now is a 50-20, it's called. So it's 50 seconds of action, 20 seconds of rest for 6 different exercises. It's harder to explain.
Sure.
It's better to show people,
yeah,
if you know what I mean. I'm not sure. Are you getting this on the screen now?
Well, I'm personally not seeing anything, but you know what you're doing? You're selling this brilliantly that people have to tune in for Off the Couch later on and actually see what's going on.
Yeah.
Listen, it's going to be lunchtime today, Eric. And how do people check out your own work as well? It's on your Facebook account?
Yeah, so I have a fan page. It's Eric Lily White Lightning Donovan Facebook page, and if anyone follows me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, they will come into contact with it, because I'll be sharing it a lot on those platforms. And as I said, yeah, people are getting involved and people are working together. There's always something that we can do. You don't need to have any. There's no excuses. You don't need any weights. You don't need any kind of equipment or anything like that. All you need is a little bit of a floor space, whether it's a living room, kitchen, anything like that, and you know, you can get moving. and we're designed by our very nature to be mobile and to be active. And, you know, if we're not doing it, we're doing ourselves a disservice. And if we are doing it, we're going to feel really good about it, and we're going to get the benefits.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Eric, it's been great catching up. Thanks a million for taking the call this morning, and mind yourself.
Thank you, Owen. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Eric Donovan there on the line. 1 o'clock is when Off the Couch will be live across all Off the Ball social channels this afternoon. And as you can hear there, not likely that you'll need any equipment in your house, all body weight. So if you've got nothing hanging around and you're missing your bit of fitness, make sure to tune into that at lunchtime, 1 o'clock today. Right. It is 21 minutes past nine on this Friday morning. We've had Keith Andrews and Eric Lilywhite Lightning Donovan on the show this morning. We've brought you the sports pages and our lockdown lowdown. And we also spoke to ICU doctor and Dublin footballer Noel Healy. If you missed any of that, you'll find it all back on our podcast or on YouTube. We'll be back with the crappy quiz right after these.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Looking for a football show with a bit of a twist?
So I know the likes of Griezmann's big into his fashion.
He wanted a lot. One question he actually asked me was, could he make his studs light up when he runs?
Team 33, the football magazine show for the football purists.
Yeah, the Nike Mercurials from 1988. If you just show that boot to an entire generation of people, and they just go instantly nostalgic and remember everything from that era.
The very best interviews with the cult heroes of the past and a look at the cultural side of football. Team 33, live at 9 p.m. every Friday on OTB Sports Radio.
OTB AM.
Chris Martin.
Oh, you're kidding me!
September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know!
Welcome along to the Shadia segment on a multitude of Irish platforms and on Irish radio. It is the scintillating, it is the stupefying, it is a splendido crappy quiz. Every Friday, we pit three of team off the ball up against one another in a quiz of sporting factoids at the end of the week. We also have a Tuesday edition now during coronavirus lockdown, semi-lockdown. If you want to check that out, you can go on to youtube.com/off the ball. Allow me to welcome tonight's contestants.
You could say see you next Tuesday, Owen.
You could do, but we're not into bad language here on Off the Ball. That's a disgusting thing to say. Our first contestant today is enjoying his remote life in the west of Ireland, where he is taking on a Tom Hanks and Castaway complex, where his best friend is his football. Kicking points all along the Wild Atlantic Way, it is Tommy Rooney.
Hello.
Welcome, Tommy.
Jermaine, only on pitches, Tommy. Only on pitches that are declassified. There are a couple of pictures that are declassified. They're archive
X pitches.
So there's a couple of loopholes.
Jerry, you made an astute observation about Tommy's gear there a moment ago.
He's wearing a tracksuit. He's comfortable. He's got his fat man pants on, and he's living his best life.
It's my only day this week wearing this. I just couldn't do it anymore. Couldn't wear my jeans over anymore.
I've heard that productivity levels drop by 20% if you put on tracksuit bottoms. If you put on your jeans in the morning, you'll actually have a better day.
I don't believe that at all. I actually think that there's a fascism about not being allowed to wear tracksuit bottoms. We should all, at the end of this, come to the conclusion that life is about 45% better if you are just wearing tracksuit bottoms, and you can be your best sloppy self. Why do we all need to wear trousers? What is so great about trousers that we decided, you're disrespecting me by wearing these tracksuits? How did that happen?
Because sloppiness is only enjoyable in short doses. Sloppiness just starts to feel like a stain on your entire character if you do it for too long. So get into those jeans for 20 minutes a day and then be sloppy for 23 hours and 40 minutes.
So you're saying
I love that jeans are the high watermark, by the way.
Oh, without question.
Dressed up to the nines in a pair of jeans.
Listen, lads, the sun is out in about 3 weeks' time. We'll all be wearing our shorts and our short-sleeved T-shirts.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. Our next contestant is a man who needs no introduction from me today, because Slower Riot on YouTube gave him a great introduction in the YouTube comment section of our last quiz. They said, "I love quizzes, guys, and I stumbled upon yours by accident. I was really enjoying it, but I have to say that Ger Gilroy, the grumpy man in the bottom right of the screen, did not cover himself in glory at all. I couldn't watch the last 5 minutes because of his poor attitude. Please consider dropping him for the next edition." Well, sorry, Slower Riot. He's back and back with a bang. Give it up for Ger Gilroy.
Woo! Was there something specific that I did? I can't even remember.
No complaining about the questions. Simple as that.
The Patrick Vieira question was ridiculous.
It happens. That happens every week, Slower Riot.
It does.
You look like you're about to say something there, Ger.
Sorry, you froze. This is the overrated qualities of Zoom that we're currently using at the moment to broadcast this. I just giving up for not knowing the song that they sing about Vieira giving the ball to Giggs. It's like, you have to be a Man United fan to know that song. I'm not a Manchester United fan, so why would I know the song? Oh, they sing a song about it. It's like barely understandable what any team sings at any point to their from the terraces, and I'm supposed to pick out this one. I'm sorry. Ridiculous question.
No complaints this week, though, Store Riot. You'll be happy to know. Our final contestant today is Off the Ball's only dad, who has not got interrupted by his kids so far, which leads to a number of pressing questions. One, does he really have kids? Two, how big is his house? And three, has he locked himself down away from his kids? Give it up for Adrian, who's your daddy, Barry?
Thanks, Owen.
You're welcome. How are you?
Adrian, is your daddy, Barry?
I think the bags under the eyes tell their own story.
You always had those.
Well, I've worked with you for a while, George, so that helps.
Hey.
You
know. Boom, boom. We are off to a flyer. The format of this week's Crappy Quiz will be questions on the year 2000 for four rounds. So we are going to quiz you on any year after that. And a fun free magic number round will be back. And also to slip inside of trivia, the rapid fire round.
Explain that again.
Can you tell us about this in advance? Can you tell us about this in advance so we can just do a little bit of research and vaguely remember who were the All-Ireland champions, all that kind of crap? Just let us know, like 20 minutes in advance so I can do a quick Google. Oh, the year 2000. Yes, I now remember that now.
Well, you might be able to take a stab in the dark what the next edition of the Crappy Quiz might be focused on. Aaron has established, folks. I don't think I need to CC everybody in the email about next week's team.
So this is a retro quiz again. We're going back to the year 2000.
For 4/6 of it, yes, it is. It is going to be 2000 for a few rounds, and then anything is up for grabs in the numbers round and the rapid fire round. You can podcast the Crappy Quiz on offtheball.com.
4/6 the same as 2/3?
Indeed, it is. Good fractions. Excellent fractions.
Honours maths right there for our Adrian Barry.
It truly is. Offtheball.com or Go Loud app is if you want to get the podcast back. You can watch it back on YouTube, as I mentioned already. And please give us 5 out of 5 if you're rating us online. And send any questions you have via Twitter DM to me or to at Offtheball. Round one, the boring 2000 questions round. Never multiple choice. Tommy, who lost the All-Ireland hurling final in 2000?
I know.
2000.
I know.
Cork.
No, it's not Cork. Who is it, Ger?
It's Galway.
No, it's not Galway. It's Offaly. Offaly lost to Kilkenny in 2000.
Right. Jeez, I did not remember that at all.
Ger.
Okay. I was thinking of 2001. I know the one who lost in 2001, though.
Yeah, you're talking too much, man.
Are we sure Galway lost in 2001? Ger, Tom Brady was drafted in the year 2000. In which round?
The 7th round.
No, it was the 6th round.
Oh, bollocks.
Apparently, just being unbelievably
is that frozen?
Automatically transfer into correct answers.
Is it 199th?
Was it 199th? I don't have the exact pick in front of me.
18 odd balls. It was, yeah. Okay.
Adrian,
can I go back? Can we do that one again?
We absolutely can some other time. Question one for you, Adrian. Euro 2000 saw a golden goal decide the entire tournament as France beat Italy in the final. Who scored the goal?
Oh, that's easy.
That is pretty easy.
You were living in a different continent at the time, were you?
Yeah.
Wales isn't that far.
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't. No, 2000. Thierry Henry.
No. Anyone?
Trezeguet, right?
Trezeguet. Round two.
Trezeguet?
Yeah, it was Trezeguet. I checked it a few minutes ago. Round two is the Sydney Olympics round. 2000 wasn't an overly memorable Olympic Games from an Irish perspective, but we are going to test your memory on those games anyway. Tommy, question two for you. I'm sure you remember sitting there in your big American accent watching Sonny O'Sullivan win silver in Sydney. You might remember that Romania took home the gold, but which country took home bronze in the 5,000 meter showdown? Was it A, Ethiopia, B, Great Britain, or C, Russia?
Russia.
No.
Ethiopia.
Brits.
Ethiopia, yeah.
The Brits.
No, the Brits came fourth.
All right.
Okay. I thought it was a trick question, so I went for the least.
Who was third?
Ethiopia.
Ethiopia was third, and Great Britain came fourth. I don't know the name.
Does she have a name?
Right. She certainly does, but I just put it in countries because I thought it might be easier to remember. Question two for you, Ger. Which of the following drug cheats did not win a medal at the 2000 Games? Was it A, Tyler Hamilton, B, Marion Jones, or C, Lance Armstrong?
Lance Armstrong.
No, it was Tyler. He won gold in 2004, Lance won a bronze in 2000, and then Marion Jones won every medal under the sun in 2000. So we have yet to score a point so far in today's crappy quiz. Adrian, you're up. Question two for you. Which individual racked up the most medals at Sydney 2000? Was it A, Michael Phelps, B, Ian Thorpe, or C, Inge de Bruin?
I'm going to go with the torpedo.
Correct. It was Ian Thorpe.
Ah, well done, Adrian.
Five medals, well done. Michael Phelps obviously didn't win anything in 2000. That was 4 years too soon for him. Inge de Bruin came second in the overall individual medal table. Round three is the good old football championship days round. This round will test your knowledge on the 2000 All-Ireland Football Championship, the last summer of not having any qualifiers. Question three for you, Tommy. Kerry and Galway played two games to decide the All-Ireland in 2000, with those counties making up 10 of the All-Star winners that year. Can you name any of the other five of the 2000 All-Stars?
Armagh. Sorry, did you say counties? Lads, the line broke up there. The line broke up.
No, it didn't. Tommy, you
know, the line broke up. Lads, did your Wi-Fi hold up there? My Wi-Fi hold up.
That tracks is dragging it down.
Clearly.
Ridiculous.
Rephrase the question.
I need the name of a player who got an All-Star in 2000.
Grant. In the year 2000. I thought you said counties. So you need a player.
Give me a player.
Yes!
In the year 2000.
Yes.
Oisin McConville.
Correct. That was easy, in fairness. Once you got Armagh, you were going to get that. Kieran McGeaney and Oisin McConville both won.
But I didn't know Armagh was right, like, but yeah.
True, yep. Kieran McKeever and Anthony Toehill also won All-Stars. Can anyone get the only Kildare man to have won the All-Star that year?
Dermot Early.
No. Anthony Rainbow.
Yeah.
And it is a question on Kildare for you, Ger. Your beloved Kildare came from the depths of hell to win the Leinster Championship in 2000, coming from 6 points down in the second half to beat Dublin in a replay of that provincial final. Can you name either of Kildare's goal scorers in that second
half? Mike Fennin.
Correct. Well done. You would have got the second one as well, would you?
Johnny Doyle?
No, Dermot Early.
Dermot Early. I was right, at that game.
One apiece. We're all on 1 point. Adrian, to go one clear, name the managers on the sideline for that year's All-Ireland football final.
Oof. Joe Kernan.
No. I did say at the start of the round it was Kerry and Galway.
Oh, you did. That is a fair shout.
Does that help?
Now that he's told you, hang on. Now that he's told you, Kerry and Galway. Yes. And who else?
And John. No.
Yeah.
Was it John O'Mahony?
Yeah, it was John O'Mahony.
Yeah, but you got it wrong. He got it wrong, though.
With a bit of help.
So it's...
No, he's not getting a point. He's not getting a point.
No, you're not getting a point.
You're not getting a point.
But not even in consideration he's getting a point.
This is nip and tuck. It's one apiece going into round four, which is the other stuff that's not sport that happened in 2000. Oh, what's going on? No.
My pen just ran out. I need another pen.
But it's not the round where you need a pen for, but we'll wait for Tommy anyway to come back. Talk amongst yourself. Well done.
I'm telling you, lads, the tracksuit's dragging. He's lost his sharpness.
What, you lost his sharpness as a result of the tracksuit, or?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. If he was wearing a pair of sharp jeans now.
You might have got it. Round four, I'll introduce round four. Round four is the other stuff that's not sport that happened in 2002 round. Despite no popular demand, it's the round that tests your nostalgic senses for non-sports matters from the year 2000. Nathan Murphy vocally objected to this slot on Tuesday's quiz. As you can see, Nathan Murphy is no more. Question four for you, Tommy. The PlayStation 2 was launched in 2000, but can you tell me which Grand Theft Auto game would go on to be the best-selling PS2 game ever?
San Andreas.
Correct. Released in 2004. Oh, thank God. 17.3 million copies sold. You're up to 2 points.
I thought it was gonna be Vice City for a second. I was never allowed to play those games.
Neither was I.
No, they're sick. They're sick.
We've got a parent speaking.
Well,
yeah,
they're sick.
There's a
sickness inherent in the bits where like why anyway. I've already talked about this on Dadcast. I'm not talking about it again.
I think I got This Is Football 2004, Pro Evolution Soccer, and FIFA. And they were the only games I had. apart from Kingdom of Hearts. Apart from Kingdom of Hearts. We should have a podcast about Kingdom of Hearts. Anyways, go on.
17.3 million sickos went out and bought San Andreas since 2004 for the PS2. Jer, Gladiator came out in 2000. Can you give me Russell Crowe's character's full name?
I've actually never seen Gladiator.
Oh.
What?
What?
Never watched the whole thing.
What an admission.
Well, that's good to know.
His full name is on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember. It's something Aurelius, Maximus Aurelius, Maximus.
You've got Maximus. If you haven't seen Gladiator and you managed to give me the full name from this point, it would be a spectacular comeback.
Well, Maximus Prime is on the my front. Oh, but it's not. It's
there has to be a time here.
TikTok.
Biggest Dickus.
I don't know. Is it? It's not. Biggest it's not Dickus. Maximus Aurelius.
No, it's not Maximus Aurelius. It's not Biggest Dickus. It is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Oh, it was close. It was close. Well,
I mean, that was very good going.
If you get a character from a movie correct, we will give you a different question in this round, Jer. So between Tyler Durden and Maximus Decimus, it's 0 from 2 points.
You're a wanker. That's what this round is. Owen is a wanker.
Question 4 for you, Adrian.
He's nodding guiltily there, but...
what can you do? Name the artist who performed these lyrics in a 2000 hit. Look at him walking around, grabbing his you-know-what, flipping the you-know-who. Yeah, but he's so cute, though. Yeah, I probably got a couple of screws up in my head loose, but no worse than what's going on in your parents' bedroom. Sometimes I want to get on TV and just let loose.
Are you joking me?
Give me the art.
He actually gave you way too many hints there.
Yeah, sing it there.
I just want to get on the TV and let loose.
He's going for a bit of a busted. You're going for a bit of a busted vibe there.
What did you go for?
I haven't got up for anything yet.
Sing it again. Give it again. I know, Jay. Give it again.
Look at him walking around grabbing his you know what, flipping the you know who. Yeah, but he's so cute though. Yeah, I probably got a couple of screws up in my head loose, but no worse than what's going on in your parents' bedrooms. Sometimes I want to get on TV and just let loose.
I think I have it. I think I've worked it out by deduction that it's obviously a TV presenter, sort of somebody at the cutting edge of pop culture. Clearly, Pat Kenny.
No, it's anyone?
Eminem.
It's Eminem. It's a real thing.
I was going to say Eminem. Oh, you're joking me.
But Owen basically wrapped it for you.
Exactly.
I was actually going to say, it's like literally the only thing serious answer I had was Eminem. I should have gone for shit.
So which it's obviously off whatever album was out in 2000. Which tune is that?
It's The Real Slim Shady.
Is it?
Why didn't I just say Eminem?
It certainly is. Remember when we thought Eminem was actually good? Look at him walking around, grabbing his you-know-what, flipping the you-know-who. Yeah, but he's so cute, though. Yeah, I probably got a couple of screws up in my head loose, but no worse than what's going on in your parents' bedrooms. Sometimes I want to get on TV and just let loose. It's an absolute poetry genius where he manages to rhyme the word loose with loose.
Have you seen he wrote about Eminem in The Guardian around this era in glowing terms?
Who wrote about it?
Seamus Heaney.
Oh, that'd right. I've not actually seen that article. I need to get out. In glowing terms, honestly, or...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, like, this guy's a poet. He's an important voice.
Yeah,
You could say Eminem's career didn't quite live up to its early promise.
Precisely.
I mean, he's rich.
And he's one of the best rappers of all time. Like, he hit a peak. Like the Rory McIlroy argument. Eminem
came back. And he even came back. He's making money nowadays.
Yeah, that does not mean you are good. That does not mean you are good. Round five is the fun-free magic number round. Contestants get 3 points for getting the number exactly right. If no one manages that, the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. The second closest gets 1 point. I'm going to say that we can only accept the answer that's written on your paper. I'm also going to have to ask for your pens once the music ends. So if you don't mind, give us the following number. The number of top-tier league titles won by Jurgen Klopp as a manager, plus the number of clubs that take part in the Bundesliga, plus the number of All-Ireland medals won by Brian Fenton so far in his career, plus the number of games Liverpool had failed to win in the 2019-20 season to date. Your 30 seconds expires when Sinatra sings Bright Shiny Beads. So we're looking for the number of league titles Jurgen Klopp has won as a manager with top-tier clubs, the number of teams that take part in the Bundesliga, plus the number of All-Ireland medals won by Brian Fenton so far in his career, and then the number of games Liverpool had failed to win in the 19-20 Premier League season.
Pens down.
Pens down.
Adrian, come on, man.
Adrian, what have you got on your sheet? 27.
Ooh. Ger?
30.
Tommy?
26.
It's 27.
Get in!
I had 27 and I scribbled it out for 26.
He takes home all 3 points. Let's go through these. The number of top tier league titles Jurgen Klopp has won as a manager.
Zero. Yeah,
two. He won two at Dortmund. I also had the number of clubs that take part in the Bundesliga?
18.
18. Yeah.
I had 20. Bollocks.
Brian Fenton has how many medals? All out of medals?
Five.
Five, correct. Four, and the number of Premier League games five. Liverpool have failed to win 1920 season?
Three.
Eight, four,
two,
seven.
Two. One draw, one defeat two. In the Premier League. Ah. So 27 is your overall answer.
So, doesn't matter how you get there, lads.
I got 2 points. Adrian got three.
No.
No, if somebody gets it exactly right, 3 points for getting that. And that's it.
Yeah.
So Adrian has done you out of points there by getting all three. The score is right
what
now.
What would have happened? What would have happened if we both had 27?
You both would have got 3 points.
You got a point and a half.
Adrian, you are on 4 points. Jerry, you are on 1 point. Tommy, you are on 2 points. We're on to the final. Our winner tonight will be decided.
Can I suggest a rule change here? That the person who's last in this round gets to go first to make it interesting.
No. Let's not do that. Let's actually reward Adrian for his greatness.
No, there's no point.
Greatness on show there for in rapid fire.
This round is over. This quiz is over. Everybody can literally turn this off right now and stop watching because they know Adrian's going to win. There's no drama in it. Where's actually?
That's not true.
If only we had a recent quiz evidence where this exact same thing happened. And to be fair, I did beat Tommy, but Nathan kicked everyone else's arse.
Well, I was just like
Adrian. Points get deducted, right?
Yes, but.
Well, I'd just like to echo what Jared said. Turn this off now. We know what's going to happen. Adrian wins.
Agreed.
Definitely not going to bottle this. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that it's the men from the boys, the Seamus Moynihans from the Seamus from Wrestlings. It's no theme in particular, ridiculously easy rapid fire round. The score you get in this round will be added to your score in the previous round. 40 seconds for everyone to answer from the same set of questions. We're going to start with Adrian because he's got the highest number of points, then onto the person in second, which is Tommy, and then onto the person in last, which is Jer. If you get a question correct, I'll ask you another question and keep asking you questions until you get one wrong. I move on to the next person if you get one wrong and your incorrect answer also means a deduction of 1 point. Adrian Barry, are you ready?
Yeah, I am ready, Owen.
Your time, your 40 seconds, starts now. Erling Haaland is from which country?
Norway.
Correct. In what city did Sonia O'Sullivan win her World Championships 5,000 metres gold?
Time.
Too long. Gothenburg. Tommy, in which division are Bolton Wanderers currently playing their football?
League One.
Correct. Who was the GPA CEO before Paul Flynn?
Desi Farrell.
No, Dermot Early. Jer, Joffre Archer plays which sport?
Football.
No, cricket. Who was currently top of the table in the 2020 Six Nations, Adrian?
England.
Time.
Correct. Who did Spurs beat in the Champions League quarterfinals last season?
Atletico.
No, it's Manchester City. Time is up.
You've cancelled out all your friends.
Come on.
You remain on four, but you still want it. Tommy, you're still on two. Jerry, you end up on zero. Adrian Barry, the champion. We told you not to watch. He was going to win.
Get in.
This round is too short, and it's done the wrong way. It should be a minute to give people a chance to get back into it, and the person who's in last should start first. It's supposed to be an opportunity. Anyway.
I agree. Give me my music. On YouTube, your poor attitude. Please consider dropping in for the next edition. Is what Slower Ride said because of all your complaining. Congratulations.
I might drop myself.
Commiserations, Jer. Commiserations, Tommy. We'll see you next time on the Crappy Quiz.
What a bunch of clowns.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.